Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm here, man. Are y'all ready for the fire talk? Low down on the biz and uplift the dialogue. Oh, yeah. Listen right along. This is straight off the press. The remix fresh with no prior song. Whoa. Supplying y'all with the certified thoughtful. Yeah. To get the piece of the piece, it's time to call blows. Yeah. The raspberry wind is fragrant, flavorful. Insatiable eardrums taste the radio. Here can't be beat. The flash of me. Better leave all your doors and all half the week. What? Positive and motivational facts to see successful guests. Promote yourself, mastery. BlogTalkRadio.com/the remix. Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Support the sister with a great reason. I must insist, don't miss it this evening, peace, man.
Everyone, want to say welcome to the remix. I am your host, of course, Miss Blue, and you know what time it is. It is time for the remix. Want to say welcome everyone to the forum tonight. So good to have you in the house tonight. It is August 19th, 2012, and of course you know what it is. It is remix time. So good to see you guys in the house tonight. We have another exciting show planned for you this evening, and so I want to say welcome to everyone out there. I want to give the telephone number, so if you want to call in, and free to do that, no matter what part of the world that you're listening in, is 646-652-2711 is the number to call for you to get on the phone lines as well. And if you would like, you can join us over in the chat room. So let me go ahead and give you some directions on how to get yourself on over to the Remix chat room. Just simply go to www.blogtalkradio.com/the remix, all one word, and you can come right on in the chat room. The chat room is open and the Remix room is in the house, sure to make you feel right at home. And also, I want to say welcome to all of our first-time listeners. If you're a first-time listener tonight, we want to say peace and greetings to you and welcome to the forum. If you're in the chat room, all you have to do is click the link at the very bottom that says sign up. It takes about 2 minutes. Click the link that says sign up. Tell us who you are. Come on in the chat room, and the Remix family will make you feel right at home. Wow, can you guys believe we're almost through the month of August already? I want to remind you before we get ready to get into this exciting share tonight, because I am so excited about our brother that's coming on tonight, is to remind you that you can download tonight's show and all of the other Remix shows by simply going to the archives, coming right over here to Remix, the Remix platform. You can hit the iTunes button if you have iTunes and download there, or you can actually download right to your computer or MP3 player so you can never miss a show. And so, welcome everyone. I want to welcome our international listeners in the house tonight. Amsterdam is in the house tonight. Welcome to you, Amsterdam. The UK is in the house tonight, as well as Brazil and all parts of Europe is in the house. Germany is listening also. And I've been getting you guys emails about listening to the show. And so I'm just trying to make sure that you guys can hear me nice and clear over here as we continue on the platform here. So welcome, everyone. Let's get right to it. We got a lot of things to cover, and we're going to get ready to bring on our very special guest for this evening. Dr. Umar Johnson is going to be coming in the house, and Dr. Umar Johnson is going to be coming join us in the platform. And yes, you guys, I know I'm breaking up a little bit. I'm definitely trying to do my best over here to get this situation under control. But no worries. I know we'll be able to hear Dr. Umar Johnson, so that's what's really important. I want to remind you that you definitely can go back and download Last Friday Night Show, which was about spirituality and also mental energy of 2012 and also 2013. Great share there. So we're going to listen to a little bit of music, as we get ready to get into the share tonight. And welcome, Dr. Umar Johnson. And for those of you who may not be familiar with Dr. Umar Johnson, he is a school psychologist who really specializes and really diagnoses. Yes, you guys, I'm breaking it very, very bad. So I tell you what, before we get ready to do that, I'm going to work on some things on this end. Boy, I tell you, sometimes it's okay. See what we can do. We'll figure it out. We'll get it working. We'll get it going good. But here's what we're going to do to welcome in Dr. Umar Johnson, and I'll come back and we'll talk about the introduction. When you got me nice and loud and clear, then we'll talk about that in just a moment. We're going to listen to a little bit of Baby Blue. Dance a little bit, listen to a little bit of music, and just get ready to receive the energy. This brother brings pure fire. He is the truth. And we're going to work on some things on this end. So here we go. Welcome to the remix, everyone. I'm your host, of course, Miss Blue. So sit back, relax, stand up, dance. Do whatever you like to do as we get ready to get into the share.
Brothers and sisters. Peace. I'm out.
All right, everyone. Peace and greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Remix. I am your host, of course, Miss Blue, and of course, you're live in The Remix. You're live here tonight with me, Miss Blue, as we get ready to welcome Dr. Umar Johnson, who's going to be joining us in the forum tonight, live here in The Remix. And I just want to say welcome to everyone here. And I want to make sure you guys can hear me loud and clear. And so we're going to go ahead and get ready to get started and get into the forum as we get ready to welcome Dr. Umar Johnson onto the platform here this evening. And so, you guys, here we go. Let's see. I know he's on the phone line. Give me just 1 second here. There he is. All right, so we're going to go ahead and welcome Dr. Umar Johnson. I apologize for some of that little difficulty there, but let's go ahead and welcome Dr. Umar Johnson to the platform. Peace and greetings to you.
Peace and love, Ms. Blue. It's a pleasure to be with you again. I don't think I've been on your show since, was it last April, when I was down in Atlanta speaking. May have been the last time we were together. Was that the last time?
I believe it was, and that's been way too long, so we are certainly in for a big treat tonight. I am so glad to have you here and have you come on the platform tonight. Everyone is excited. We're all here, and so good to have you here on the platform, and always good to hear the knowledge and information that you bring. It truly is a good form of inspiration for us, and not only that, solid truth, and really truth that we can reach out and touch. So so great to have you here.
Oh, the honor is all mine. Always love coming on to your show. I believe that it is one of the archives from the two or three previous shows that we have done, I believe, are some of my most listened to blog type interviews that I've ever been a part of.
Oh, wow, beautiful. Well, glad to play a role in that. I want to start by giving you an introduction. You know, even when I was kind of putting the show together and really just thinking about all the work that you have done, you're definitely not just lip service, even though people can Google your name, and a lot of people have because they've been sending me emails all week since I announced you've been coming on, saying that they wanted to find out more information about you. And definitely your work is everywhere, and now it's even reaching outside of the boundaries of right here of what we call the United States and really just reaching internationally, just helping our people, our children, our community, and just collectively helping everyone. So I want you to take just a few moments here in the beginning. I know we're going to be talking about a lot of things. And just kind of give people an overview, a little bit about you, your work, your passion, and what you've been up to.
Certainly. Dr. Umar Johnson is the name, one of 11 children, 6 girls, 5 boys. I'm the oldest of 5 boys. People often joke and they call us the Johnson 5 as opposed to the Jackson 5, making reference to myself and my 4 younger brothers. I'm a nationally certified school psychologist with a doctoral degree in clinical psychology. I am also a certified school principal and also formally trained as a political scientist. So those are my 4 areas of formal training. Informal self-education would be in the area of Pan-Africanism. I am a devout follower of the teachings of not only the Honorable Marcus Garvey, whose birthday we just celebrated 48 yes. hours ago, and actually we got celebrated today, here in Washington, D.C., with the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the Garvey Movement's Washington, D.C. chapter. They had a powerful program today from 3 to 7 at the Tree of Life Public Charter School here in Washington, D.C. So I'm a Garveyite, which is the same as saying I'm a revolutionary Pan-African nationalist. So I'm very interested in uniting African people from all across the world and very interested in having us be the major player in terms of reversing the problems that we solve. Pan-Africanism is basically saying we're one race, and we put our race above our religion, above our skin color, our language, our education, our background. And so I spend a lot of my time working with children in schools. I diagnose special education disabilities. I decide who gets the individual education plans. As you know, I spend a lot of time doing corrective evaluations. Corrective evaluations meaning that when African-American and Hispanic children, particularly the boys, are misdiagnosed with one of the big four, being mental retardation, the specific learning disability, the emotional disturbance, and then the ADHD / conduct disorder / disruptive behavior disorder / oppositional defiant disorder. Those four diagnoses are a very big problem in our community because too many children are being classified with disabilities that they don't have so they could be put in classrooms so teachers don't have to be bothered with them. So that's basically my crusade. Working on a book, The Psychoacademic War Against Black Boys, from grade school to the graveyard. But there's a possibility that another book called Diary of a Mad Black Psychologist. Yes, ma'am. The Trials and Tribulations of Being an Educational Diagnostician in the American School System. So I'm not sure which one will come out first. Then there's a third one that's competing, and that third one is Not Without My Race, the political autobiography of Dr. Umar Johnson.
Oh, wow. Well, exciting things to come. I know that I had a chance recently to go visit your website. I see you've done so much work, like so much stuff is over there. And that was one of the things that I just could not wait for. So you guys are in for a big treat who have not had a chance to go over to Dr. Umar Johnson's website, which is www.drumarjohnson.com, and check out all of the goodies there. Because so much of your time, I know last time that you came on and you still do this work for parents, you make yourself available to our people. If anyone needs you, schools, education, community, our children, you're right there for us. And I know a lot of times we need to hear things over and over again so we can get it. And so I love the fact that you're coming out with these books, and you also have a lot of some of your greatest work where people can actually go and they can purchase it and they can have it so they can really take it into their homes, their communities, into their groups that have been formed through school systems and begin to work with this information. So really, really life-changing work. So it's an honor to have you here and to talk about that. I know one of your recent things, you were just recently in Source Magazine, which I had the opportunity to rush out early Saturday morning and get, and the article that was featured in on you and the article that you actually wrote, which was The Freedom to Offend. And so I want to talk about that a little bit and then start to get into some of the things that you really feel that we should be focused on at this time. I would like to say for anyone who's joining the platform, and it doesn't matter what part of the world that you're in, if you are a parent, like I said, you plan on being a parent. If you have children, know somebody who has children. You yourself have been a child. This is also some things that's going to impact you because really this is a lot where a lot of this psychology begins to start, or even when we start to talk about the miseducation of these things.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Looking very much forward to the discussion, Mrs. Blue.
Okay. So talk about the article, Freedom to Offend. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes, indeed. I was contacted by a writer for the Source magazine back in January, I think it was, or early February. He said he wanted to feature me in a piece for Black History Month. So we met up in a town outside Philadelphia. He conducted the interview, and shout out to him, Brother Shabi Allah, for thinking enough of me of writing the actual piece and then submitting it. And actually, it didn't get printed in February, although it was supposed to. So I kind of thought that the Source had forgotten about me and that they really didn't see the article as being important enough to be published. And then all of a sudden, about two, 3 nights ago, I'm laying in my bed and I get an email alert. And it was from Brother Shad B. And he said, our article did get published, and it's in the current Source magazine with rapper Meek Mills on the cover, which is quite interesting because Meek Mill is from Philadelphia, as am I. So the current issue of the Source with him on the cover wearing the red jacket, sitting on his motorcycle. You know, I guess we can call it the Philadelphia issue, because both he and I are featured in it. And it's a pretty good article talking about the redirection of hip-hop music away from its original consciousness-raising and fun-having purpose to one that now glamorizes so many of the behaviors that are actually contributing to the mass incarceration of black males.
Yes. Excellent article. If you guys get an opportunity, you definitely want to make sure that you pick this article up to read it. What I found to be interesting in the article is all of this got stirred up because of an actress who decided to use the word nigga, you know, which is something that has kind of been thrown around on so many different levels. And really now all of a sudden it's like all of this controversy coming up behind this particular word, and interested to see who came to her defense to say, hey, leave her alone. She's good.
Yeah, it's sad. It's very sad. The reason why African people, and particularly our young people, don't like to do away with the N-word, Mrs. Blue, is because intergenerationally, for the past 500 years, that has been the name that has been used to identify and denigrate us. It is so conditioned into the collective subconscious of African people that many of us, not knowing why, continue to cling to it. And not only do we continue to cling to it, we will fight for the right. I've seen rappers and comedians and actors, even politicians, defend the right to use that word when referencing ourselves. Now, the interesting thing about the use of the N-word as a continued self-identifier is that we are the only people, Mrs. Blue, the only people in documented history, the only people in documented who will fight for the right to use such a racially oppressive word to continue to identify ourselves with. You don't find Jew using some of the negative terminology that has been used against them historically to self-identify. You don't find Europeans doing it. You don't find Hispanics, East Indians, Arabs, Native Americans. No other people walking this earth has ever fought for the right to continue to use a term that has been used to systematically degenerate them for over 500 years until this present day, claiming to be free, but yet clinging to that word. It is one of the greatest symptoms, I believe, of the post-traumatic slavery disease that still infects African people and is responsible for our backwardness economically, culturally, politically, militaristically, in terms of the black family. That post-traumatic slavery, that self-hatred, Mrs. Blue, is at the core of why we really haven't came as far as we should have since the end of slavery.
And so even though, because here's one of the debates on this, and I don't want to stay here too long, is that we're really taking some word that is negative and we've turned it around and we've made it somewhat positive, but you're saying that that's only a facade. That really was
that is
the
only
core of
a facade. Only a facade. And the reason we can say that it's only a facade is because self-respecting peoples, Mrs. Blue, as soon as they are able, they do away. They do away with any concept, verbal or otherwise, that they know and are aware of as having been used historically as a means of oppression. Their self-respect, Mrs. Blue, their self-respect demands that they shed all vestiges of any symbol that reminds them of their oppression. It is a facade.
Right.
Why? Because words are created every day. New words are coined every day. If we wanted to, we could create a new word to identify ourselves with. But not only that, we have several ancient ones, such as African, Ethiopian, Alkibalanian, just all sorts of positive, culturally affirming words that we can use. I mean, you have over 200 languages in Africa, hundreds of cultures. If you need a word, why not dig within the rich history of your culture and find one? Why cling to something that has only been used as a source of oppression and then try to clean it up and make it a mark of respect? It's because subconsciously we cling to it because for many of us it's all we know, and the reason we fight for the right to use it is because deep down inside, our unconscious, our unconscious is still the unconscious of a Negro.
Makes a lot of sense now that you definitely put it out there that way. I know one of the things that I could say is true, and I see this so much in the work that I do as well, too, is the first thing that people do to separate themselves is that they change their name. So whether they change their name to whatever group, whatever religion they're a part of, or whatever culture they begin to take themselves into, even if we want to say it's the conscious community, they try to disassociate with those things that is negative. So you're absolutely true when it comes to this word, why it's so difficult to disconnect from this word. People have changed their names. They have changed even things on their bodies, their faces. They have done all of these changes, but it seems like this particular word is something that is just sort of kind of clinging, and no one wants to let go of it.
Very much so. That word, to African-American culture, is the equivalent to what apple pie is in American culture. It is so ingrained within the social landscape and has been used for so long that we have taken sickness and made it normal. And one of our biggest problems as a people, Mrs. Blue, is that we are now normalizing pathology. We are normalizing sickness. We are normalizing insanity. Let me give you another example. Look at the amount of African children who are being raised in single-parent homes without the participation of the non-custodial parent. That is not normal. Every child is born with a spiritual and psychological need to receive an equal amount of masculine energy from the father and feminine energy from the mother. But because we are so used to having either the mother or the father raise the children in isolation, that you now have people saying that a woman doesn't need a father to raise her children. A man doesn't need a mother to raise their children. And then when we look around and we see these record numbers of homosexual youth, record numbers of lesbian youth, record numbers of bisexual youth, record numbers of depression, alcohol abuse, marijuana usage, hard drug addiction, food addiction, sex addiction, shopping addiction, and we say, what's wrong with our children? What's wrong is we have now come to believe that it's okay for them to only receive the spiritual nurturance of one parent and not the other.
So very true. And we see this so much. And, you know, it's a question that even myself, you know, I've kind of tussled with about it. Now, I would say, could a child be raised by one person? I mean, honestly, I would have to say, yes, it could, but that's not the ideal situation. And so much does go miss with that. Have we really taken on sort of this old lineage that it takes a community and really just kind of encompass the fact of how it used to be at one particular time that everyone was the father? Because it seems like really, and I know that sounds a little twisted, but I know with a lot of sisters that are single parent, it seems like everybody's the father. Every man that comes in the life, the children is calling the man father, doesn't even know who he is, and next thing you know, there's somebody else that's there. I mean, what's going on with that?
One of the problems is we've lost that collective community consciousness. Collective community consciousness. If the father was in jail, if the father was deceased, if the father was not interested, it didn't matter to a certain degree because the other men in the community were automatically fill in. If the mother was missing, the other women would fill in. If the grandfather was missing, the other elders would fill in. But what I'm hearing a lot now, Ms. Blue, as I travel, not just the country but the world, visiting different African communities, is I'm starting to hear the rise of the responsibility of the individual family. And on the surface, it sounds good because it sounds very American. Take care of your family.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about the whole community. If everybody
right.
just takes care of their own family, the community will be fine. That is nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. Why? Because it fails to consider, Mrs. Blue, that some families don't have the resources, the manpower, or the know-how to take care of their family without support. It is
right.
that everyone is in a position to do that, which is not the
right.
reality. A lot of our people don't have those resources that they need. But what I found is this whole individual family empowerment is really a scapegoat for those of us who can do a little bit more for somebody else, but because we're selfish, we don't want to. So we always
right.
like to cry and boohoo about what the individual families are not doing because we don't want to accept the responsibility that it's the community who's ultimately in charge for everything that goes on in that community. For example, for every black male who drops out of high school, every young sister who gets pregnant as a teenager, every mother who's robbed, every father who's shot, who's at fault for that? All of us.
Right.
The community takes responsibility, not the individual parents, not the individual family. Are you telling me that a woman raising three boys is at fault when they drop out of school? And we're supposed to look at her like something's wrong with her? I don't think so. No, not
right.
at all. That is not the African way. We are all at fault. And until we reclaim our collective community consciousness, these problems that we have are going to continue to get worse. They're not going to get better. Things
right.
only get better when you work to reduce them, to eliminate them, to replace them. So people keep saying it's getting worse and worse being black. It's getting worse and worse being black. That is the natural progression of political problems when you do nothing about them and expect to wish them away.
Right, right. Makes sense. It does. Dr. Umar Johnson, you guys, live here in the remix as we continue this discussion. So much of that is going on that has trickled itself down. And here's how I've seen that particular concept where it says take care of your family. A lot of times it seems that no one wants to be responsible. And yet alone, I know one of the things that I see is not so much that they don't want to be responsible for their family. I mean, that's even a big step. They don't want to be responsible for themselves.
Oh, that's very
you know?
True. That's
you know?
Very,
so
very true.
They don't want to be responsible for themselves, you know. It's kind of like, you know, I don't want to be responsible. I just want to be able to do, I hear this time and time again, do what I want to do and how I want to do.
And
how
that,
I
want
to do it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. A lot of that, Ms. Blue, comes from two things. And I can best describe it with a quote from the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, ironically. He said that if the black man and woman are not careful, we will drink in all the poison of Western civilization, and we will die as a result of that. We have become so Americanized as African people that I think we're more European than the Europeans are. I really believe that. We have totally lost our way. This pursuit of rugged individualism, this pursuit of materialism, black people are so used to not having, Mrs. Blue, coming from a legacy of slavery, that we spend our whole life trying to get rich. Literally, we spend our whole life trying to get rich only to become comfortable to realize that it wasn't worth the sacrifice that you actually underwent to obtain it and to ultimately realize that money, a nice house, nice car, does not bring happiness.
Right.
All emotions are internally generated. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
None of them come from the outside. But a lot of that, Mrs. Blue, has to do with the fact that every last one of us has to fight an internal war. There's
That's
an
true.
Internal war raging in every human being, especially within Africans as God's first people. And that is a war between the self
mm-hmm.
and the ego.
Yes.
The spirit and the mind. We all go through this. Some of us win, some of us lose. And those of us who suffer the worst losses, you see it. It's the suicide. It's the homicide. It's the mental breakdown. It's the schizophrenia. And those of us who win, you see it. It's the spiritual bliss. It's the temperance.
Yeah.
It's the peace of mind. It's the serenity.
Yeah.
It's the solitude. But that battle between good and evil which has been so symbolically represented in every major religious philosophy from ancient Kemet down to Christianity, is something that we haven't dealt enough with. And the second piece, Mrs. Blue, is we have lost the wisdom of discipline. Black people have lost the wisdom of discipline. The wisdom of discipline says, basically, I will be better off by controlling myself than I would by going freely. That is a wisdom that we have always had as a people. The wisdom that said, I'm going to get married young, and I shouldn't be talking as a man with two children and never been married, but I have to tell myself as well, because we have to be honest.
Right.
The wisdom that says, I need to get married young, so that way I only experience my wife. And if I only experience my wife, I don't have to worry about the lustful types of energies that will arise in me that come from having experienced too many women to the point that you don't feel you can be satisfied by any one woman. And that's just one example. But that wisdom of self-discipline is something we're going to have to reclaim if we're going to reclaim ourselves.
So true. So true. Wow. Yes. Wow. Some powerful revelations there. Based upon your work, because you've been doing this really all of your life, based upon your work, do you see any progress?
Do I see any progress? Yes. I see progress on the individual level when I see some parents, even single parents, who make you want to cry when you see such a standout, immaculate job they have done raising children on their own. Or when I see a mother and a father, a husband and a wife, working through their own personal differences to save their family. When I see people in the schools and on the street doing whatever they can to try to rescue our people, the problem, Mrs. Blue, is it that we don't have people out there who are leading by example? That's not the problem. The problem is it's not enough of them, that their efforts are not coordinated, they are not organized, and the biggest problem of all is that black leadership, political, secular, religious, is not really interested to the extent that we need them to be. I didn't say at all, but to the extent that we need them to be, they are not as interested as is necessary to help us reverse these problems. We have to be clear. No people, and black people like to skirt around this issue because a lot of us have turned our leaders into idols, which is something you should never do. Minister Farrakhan is not an idol. He's a leader, and he should be constructively criticized like anybody else. Al Sharpton, President Obama, who I think is probably the greatest example of how you should not idolize someone so much to the point where they are not allowed to be questioned about their negligence. But this ain't, this isn't just Farrakhan, Sharpton, and Obama. Even on the local political level, go to any black community, Mrs. Blue, and we have a hard time holding even our ministers accountable for receiving $3 billion every Sunday and not really showing us where that money's going, because it's not going up into heaven to God. So we like to get away from it, but the people cannot climb any higher than their leadership. The leaders symbolically put the people on their back and they carry them up the mountain. The people have to be ready, and the leadership has to be ready. If the leaders are ready and the people are not, the leaders end up getting assassinated, i.e. Dr. King, Malcolm X.
Yes.
If the people are ready and the leaders are not, chaos can ensue. Because guess what a riot is? You know what a riot is? A riot is the voice of oppressed people who were waiting on a leader, never got one, and felt the compulsion to act in the moment. When I was just in England the first week in July, I did a national tour of the country of England, which took me to Bristol, Luton, London, Birmingham, Tutton, and one other city. I really enjoyed myself. And I got a chance to visit the area where our brothers and sisters rioted not too long ago in London. But as Dr. King so eloquently said, riots are the voice of the oppressed. When oppressed people need a leader and can't find one, they riot. And until we organize ourselves and choose our leaders and stop letting them choose us, which is something that is also unique to black people, Mrs. Blue, we are the only people in this country where the leaders choose us. You're supposed to choose the leader. All
right.
Due respect to these leaders, but they're not being chosen by the people. They're being self-appointed. And whenever you have a self-appointed leader, you know what the deficiency is? Accountability.
Yes.
Whenever you have someone who's self-appointed, it's hard to hold them accountable because you didn't choose them. And because you couldn't choose them, you can't replace them.
That's
and so
right.
those are some of the contradictions in a black existence that we have to do something about.
Really good. Really good. Well, it's good to know that there is some progress being made, but definitely not enough. And I know this is a big part of your work and also your particular plight. Let's talk about now something that's at the core of the work that you do, and that has to do with our children. I can tell you in the session, whether I'm doing readings for the parents or for the children, it's almost in every single scenario, a situation comes up where a parent has something with their children that's being diagnosed with ADHD and all of these other things. And with school coming back up, so much of this is back on the rise about this. Talk to us a little bit about why this came to be. I know it had a lot to do with some laws that happened back in the 80s, I believe, or 70s, late 70s,
yes,
80s, and how this change came about, and that this was not something that was done in order to help. It was done really as another way to just single out and really be able to discriminate between our children, particularly those of African-American descent, children, to find another way to discriminate against them within our school system.
Yes, indeed. Well, one thing that I need us to be aware of, and your listeners as well, is that public school in America is about to be abolished, Mrs. Blue. This is very important that your listeners understand. This is a national movement, by the way. There's a lot of congressmen on Capitol Hill who do not see the need for United States Department of Education. The United States Department of Education came to us in the 1980s. It's not that old. It's only about 30 years old or so, because the United States Constitution does not give our children a constitutional right to learn. The United States Constitution does not deal with education. And so because of that, many conservatives and even liberals, many American fundamentalists, are opposed to federal funds being used to pay for something that the Constitution does not guarantee a right for. So there is a movement on Capitol Hill, and there is a movement by many conservative circles, and there's even some black people involved in this, unfortunately, who want to eliminate the United States Department of Education and turn all education over to the state departments of education, who in turn are currently expanding the charter school opportunities as a way to suck the best talent out of the public schools. Charter schools are being used to snatch away all of the high-achieving students out of the public school. So the only thing that will be left are children who nobody wants to educate and who will be destined for jail or early extermination. Once the charter schools have taken all of the talented students out, there's then going to be a move to shut down as many public schools as possible because you no longer have enough students in them to justify funding them. At
that
point, they're going to squeeze all the leftover black boys and a few black girls into a couple of schools, and then they're going to turn those schools over to the private prison industry. And then before you know it, there will be no public schools left. In your lifetime, you may actually see a situation where the children no longer have a right to go to school, and the only ones who will go to school are those who get accepted. And of those who get accepted, Mrs. Blue, only those whose parents can afford the education will be allowed to attend school. This is happening right now.
Yes, it is.
This is a big move. It is major. Yeah. It is happening in every city. It is happening
in
rural
state.
Areas as well. And so what's going to happen with the boys that are left in the public school when they turn those schools over to prison industry corporations? They're going to bring in the psychiatric managers, and they're simply going to dope in comatose, in kids who are left over into oblivion. So they're just going to be used to get to, as a psychiatric financial base. That's what's happening to public school. So black people, the African-American community, has to start building our own schools at this point, because it's not a question of whether we want to. That's out. The reality is, if we don't build schools for our children, they won't get an education. Now, let me say this point. Look at all the young black children who are arrested every day in
That's
this
right.
country with compulsory education, with
That's
mandatory
right.
180 days of mandatory education in America, and you still have record numbers of black children being arrested. What's going to happen, Ms. Blue, when their parents have to go to work and they are
right.
home all day? Because school
that's
is
right.
no longer mandatory, and they either can't get in one or the parent can't afford it. Do you know what that's going to do to the mass incarceration rate?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
All of this is
wow.
part of the
yeah.
grand design to rid America of black people. And it's interesting, Mrs. Blue, because a lot of black people who did not believe that there was a program for African racial extermination in this country and in this world for that matter, a lot of people who would have argued me down 5-10 years ago, are now coming back and saying, Brother Umar, I'm starting to see what you're talking about. In
yeah.
fact, not to toot my own horn at all, but I was in Black and Nobel Bookstore in North Philadelphia right before I flew out last week. And one of the brothers gave me a DVD, and I'm going to watch this DVD, Brother Tyson. Shout out to Black and Nobel in North Philadelphia. They keep a lot of the conscious information there. But Brother Tyson said, when you go home, watch this DVD. He said,
right.
this is the first lecture you did in our bookstore years ago. This before people even knew who Umar Johnson was. He said, when you go home, I want you to watch it. Because he said, every prophecy that you made in this DVD has come true. Now, that's no
wow.
testament to any type of brilliance or anything on my part, Mrs. Blue. But I'm simply saying that to say that politics is a science. It's political
yeah.
science. If you
right.
understand what we've been through, and if you
yeah.
understand what's currently happening, you'll be
you'll
able
know.
To successfully,
to predict your future.
Although unfortunately, predict your future.
Yes, so true. And you know, one of the things that you're talking about has gone on, and this was a few years ago. I don't know if you heard about what they were doing. Particularly, it was in a lot of states, but majorly in New York, called the Rubber Room, where they were sending these teachers into the Rubber Room. Actually, I did a story with it here. A CNN correspondent was listening. The story broke, and that's how the Rubber Room really kind of got out worldwide. So one of the teachers was here, and she spoke on the platform about being in the Rubber Room, and I think she had been there a year. Another sister was there. She ended up committing suicide or dying from being so depressed, because she was speaking up for black children because they were trying to make the school a charter school. And she did not want to participate in it, but she didn't have a choice to participate in whether or not the school was a charter school or not. And so what you're saying about schools being turned over to charter, you see that more and more and more. And she was in a situation where half the school was a charter school, and the other half of the school was not. And her class and her children were not allowed to go use the computer labs. They were not allowed to go on field trips or anything. And when she asked the principal why not, they said, because that is reserved for the half of the school that is charter. And so her children were not allowed to participate in these things. So these things are real, and they're definitely happening as we speak now, yes.
Let me say this about the charter school. People often say, why should I oppose the creation? Not the creation so much, but why should I oppose the transformation of a public school into a charter? If a charter school is going to bring in people with fresh minds, with innovative ideas, who want to improve the education in this neighborhood school, why are we against that? People are saying, I don't understand why I should oppose a charter when the current system is broken. I'll tell you why. By law, charter schools function as independent school districts.
Yeah.
In other words, every charter school is a district itself. So let's say you have 15 charter schools in a particular district. You now have 16 school districts. You have the original district, and then you have the 15 charters, each in its own right a district. Although the local district has supervisory power, that rarely gets enforced. Charter schools basically do what they want and will continue to until we start seeing some class action lawsuits by parents because this is public money that they're using, but they're operating as if it's private. Now, the reason you would oppose the transformation of a public school into a private, although you might not oppose the formation of a charter, but you should oppose the transformation of a public school into a charter, is because once that public school becomes a charter, Mrs. Blue, automatically, by virtue of doing that, it becomes its own district, which means it could limit how many students can actually be enrolled at that school. It can limit how many students can be in a classroom. It can automatically change the racial makeup of the teaching body or the student body. When you charterize a public school, Mrs. Blue, you don't know what's going to happen when your child comes back next year or if they will be allowed to return at all. Now, if you're a parent of a high-achieving child, obviously you have nothing to worry about. But if we're concerned with all of our children, many of whom struggle because of personal psychosocial family issues or because of poor prior instruction and education, we cannot be comfortable having them receiving letters over the summer that you have to find another school because this one has become charter and we don't have room for your child and we don't think they're a good fit. So what happens if you have children being pushed out of a school that was a neighborhood school, Mrs. Blue? It was convenient. It was walking distance. And now they might have to walk a little bit further or go into a neighborhood that can be dangerous because, you know, hey, we still have these turf wars in the inner city. And, in fact, what happened in Philadelphia, I'll give you an example of how transformation from public to charter can cause problems. In Philadelphia, like most other cities, you have these turf wars, these gangs. But when the charter, when the school gets transformed and that school is now charter and no longer public, guess what they're going to do with all the kids they don't want? Send them to the next closest public school. Problem with that is that next closest public school, Ms. Blue, is about 15 blocks away in another neighborhood. And so the kids that you're sending into the school are used to fighting those kids. So now you're forcing them to go to school in the neighborhood that they've been fighting with for the past 10 years, and we wonder why there's so many shootings on school property. No one's going to bring up the charter school, but the charter school started it by forcing kids who historically didn't get along for whatever reason to now have to learn together, and so now they're killing together. And then we have the vouchers, Mrs. Blue. We have the vouchers. A lot of black people are getting hoodwinked into the voucher. The voucher system is a very clever way of taking money out of public schools that already don't have enough and giving that money to working class or middle class black parents who, although they may be struggling, make enough money to pay for their child's private education. So what the voucher says is this. We're going to give you a $4,000 check for your child. You can take this check to any private school you want. $4,000, we're going to give this to you every year. Now, if you're you, Mrs. Blue, or if you're me, and you make enough money where you say, you know what, with that $4,000, I'll be able to supplement the other $7,000 to pay for my child's $11,000 private education. But that's for parents who are working class. What if you're poor?
What about those? What are you going to do?
If private school is $11,000 and the school district gives you $4,000, a poor parent can't get $7,000. Their child is going to be forced to stay just where they are. And because that child is forced to stay where they are, they're not going to get the type of resources and help that they need. Why? Because all the other parents who was able to benefit by the, from the $4,000 grant are using it, so that's $4,000 less for your child. Not only is it $4,000 less, it's 4,000 times how many parents were able to capitalize on the voucher program. So the school was already underfunded, and now it's extremely underfunded by virtue of the voucher system, which means the school sooner or later is going to have to do what? Close down all together because we don't have enough money to provide education, which is exactly what the voucher system is designed to do. The voucher system is designed to liquidate the funds of the public school and close down anyway. And a lot of black people, Mrs. Blue, who are selfish and only care about their own children are not looking at the bigger picture at how the voucher system is designed as a backward strategy to eliminate public education.
Beautiful. Powerful. And a lot of people are, I don't know if you're in the chat room, but a lot of discussion is going on about the vouchers. And so many people, it looks like they have been exposed to the vouchers and really just surprised to know what these vouchers are really about and what's at the core of them. These are things that we definitely need to look at. So I want to ask you, because I know that you're definitely a man about solutions. What is the solution for us?
You have a temporary solution, which is reactionary, because temporary things are more like Band-Aids than solutions.
Yes.
And then you have proactionary solutions. And the proactionary thing, Mrs. Blue, honestly, is to build our own schools because they're going to be closing anyway.
Yes.
That's the best thing we can do. Provide African-American boys with the African-American male teachers that they need. And you know what's so interesting? I travel the country, and I participate in these conferences and workshops, and there's a lot of non-African people participating, and the same questions come up time and time again. They come up in Texas. They come up in New York. They come up in Jamaica. They come up in London. They come up everywhere I go. What can we do to reduce the dropout rate of black males? What can we do to stop the violence? What can we do to improve grades? What can we do to reduce suspension and expulsion? What can we do? There's one simple strategy, Mrs. Blue, that will eliminate 75% of these problems, and that is to give every black boy a black male teacher. If you just did that, you would cut out 75, at least 75, and I believe possibly 95% of the problems that our boys have. The deficiencies of black males, Mrs. Blue, is a deficiency of masculine fatherly attention.
Oh, yeah.
That's the deficiency. They deal with women at home all day. They deal with women at school all day.
These
boys are starving. They are starving for masculine attention. And because we don't want to admit that they need not only males, but black males, we don't want to admit to that. A lot of black women don't want to admit to it because they have been so empowered by white racism into believing they don't need the male.
That's right.
White folks don't want to admit it, Mrs. Blue, because if you start saying that black boys need black men, if that becomes a requirement, do you know how many millions of white women lose their teaching jobs?
That's right.
Let's be clear about something. Public school is about jobs, Mrs. Blue.
Public school is about jobs. Most
teachers in America are middle-class white women. Most correctional officers are middle-class white males. Do you know what that means? That means so many white families, Mrs. Blue, living in the suburbs with good benefits, good retirement, paying for their children to go to college, are living their life on the incarceration of black men, living their life on the miseducation of black children.
Right.
This is happening in America. It is a crisis that we have so many people who don't care. I didn't say all of them, but we got to be honest. America is a thoroughly racist country, and black people have to stop acting like it's not. Because when you do that, you become an accomplice to your own oppression. We have to stop doing that. And we do it because we're afraid that if we sound too, quote-unquote, black, there may be backlash from other blacks or from white people. Isn't it interesting that people say you act too black? Have you ever heard of a Jewish man acting too Jewish?
No,
have you ever
never.
Heard of a Native American being too Native American? Have
no.
you ever heard of an East Indian being too Indian? An Arab,
no.
you're acting too Arab. You're too Arabic. Only with black people is it that you're too black? And do you know why mm-hmm. that is? Because there is the expectation that you will conduct yourself as a European in black face.
Right,
and
right.
Because of
and
that,
I want you to
acting white is normal,
right.
but being yourself has become a crime.
Yes. So true, and very powerful point. I want you to speak to this because there's a lot of discussion about this where people are saying in some of the comments in the chat room that's being saying is that we need balance. Tell us why, based upon your work and your studies, that it is so key that we have the black male for the black boys as opposed to having black sisters for black girls. I know this is not
okay.
about boy versus girl, but there is a
no,
significant
no,
reason why
yes,
we do this as opposed to for the girls.
And I want to clear it up for your listeners so they understand where I'm coming from. American society is at war against black males, always have been. Because of that, black males more so than the females, because there is a war of white supremacy against black women. I want to be clear. But the war
right.
against the black male is way more aggressive. You don't have one out of every four black girls graduating from high school. You don't have one out of every four black girls involved in the prison system. You don't have one out of every three black boys diagnosed with a, one out of three black girls diagnosed with a disruptive behavior disorder, and two out of every four black boys on psychiatric medication. You don't have that. So although there's a war against the girls, the war against the boys is way more aggressive because he is considered a threat. Because under
right.
normal circumstances, a woman cannot defeat a male. And because of that, the black woman is not necessarily a threat to global white supremacy. She becomes one to the extent that she supports her man. And that's
mm.
why the disruption of the black family is critical. It is critical in order for black people to be exterminated because the family is the basic and the first institution in our community. If that is broken, so many other things are broken. Let me give you an example.
Yes.
I have an older daughter, 10 years old. When I go into court for custody or what have you, I'm actually begging a white man to spend
right.
time with my black daughter.
Mm.
When you do you know how demoralizing that can be?
Right.
I walk in here with 6 degrees, 3-piece suit, and I have to ask a white man to see my child. And
right.
because the white man already knows who Dr. Umar Johnson is, because I'm very well known in Philadelphia and throughout the state of Pennsylvania, I already know that he's not going to work in my best interest because he's read my articles,
right.
he's heard my interviews.
Right.
And he basically laughs in my face. And the reason he laughs at so many black men, especially those of us who are politically inclined and trying to do something about our community, it's because he's laughing because he's saying, here you are, giving your life for the upliftment of your people, and
mm.
you can't even see your own daughter without getting my permission.
Right.
So I'm only bringing that up to show you how the destabilization
mm.
of the black family and the relationships within our community are so critically important to the maintenance, perpetuation, and existence of white supremacy. Now, for the listeners, I want the ladies to be clear. We're not saying that the mothers are not important. When a boy
right.
doesn't have his mother, Mrs. Blue, when
oh,
a boy doesn't have his mother, he draws conclusions as to why he didn't have her. And if he thinks that his mother walked out of his life, didn't care, he will spend the rest of his life taking that pain out on every black woman he dates.
Oh,
so in
yeah.
no way am I suggesting that mothers are not important. You are
right.
God incarnate.
Yes.
There is no such thing as a mother not being important. What I need the sisters to understand is when I speak of a need for men, I'm speaking based on the circumstances that we face. In other words, because of the carnage and the war against black men, it's not enough of us. And so when I speak of black boys being black male teachers, I'm speaking from the perspective of a war against black males. Let's say the situation was reversed, Mrs. Blue, and that the war
yeah.
against black women was more aggressive than the war against black males, then guess what I would be arguing for? I would be arguing
yes.
for female teachers
yes.
because the boys need that feminine energy and the girls
right.
need those role models. So I would
That's
be
right.
arguing for the exact opposite if the situation was different, because I agree with your callers, we need the balance.
That's
the
right.
The reason we're arguing for the male teacher is to bring the balance, because right now in the public school, there is no balance. 93% of all public school teachers are white females.
Mm-hmm.
That is no balance. It's not even racially balanced. Forget the gender. It ain't even racially balanced. So we have a racial and a gender imbalance in the public schools, and we have it in the house by virtue of the man not being there. That is not the black woman's fault. We're simply saying that the children, if we want them to grow up straight and not lean, we got to give them mom and we got to give them dad, and they are equally important.
So true. And very well needed to be said, because these things are very much important. So let's kind of go back and kind of follow through on some of this. We need definitely more black male teachers. This would be what you would consider a short-term solution. How do we do that? How do we begin to get more of our brothers interested in educating our teachers? Educating our children in this school system that they have come from that has been so broken, when they can simply switch their degree plan and go out here and make some money?
Well, first, I want to dispel the myth that the reason we have so few black male teachers is because of a lack of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do need to improve interest amongst the males, but that's not the reason why you have so few. In fact, white males, Mrs. Blue, do not generally incline toward careers in education, because education has always been a female-dominated field.
Yes, so true.
But you have more white male teachers than you have black, even when we deal with percentages and not raw numbers, obviously, because there's more whites in America than blacks. But even as a percentage of their overall population, you still have more white males teaching than black males. You know why? Because there's different programs in this country controlled by Caucasians that seeks to pay off people's student loans who did not major in education. Into the inner city, Mrs. Blue, and teaching for 3 to 5 years, you get your loans totally forgiven.
We have AmeriCorps.
We have City Year. We have all these teacher recruitment programs that are looking for people without teaching experience, without an education degree, to come into the inner city and teach in exchange for student loan forgiveness and other perks. Do you not think black men would jump for the same? Do you not think they wouldn't want to give an opportunity to come into their own neighborhood and teach? Of course they would. But we have to deal with structural racism. And structural racism, Mrs. Blue, says that even in a predominantly black inner city school district, most of these non-certified, non-education majored people who are brought into the school through these recruitment programs and given emergency certifications so they can teach do not have a respectable or representative number of black male or female, male or female recruits. So I am saying that there is a deliberate attempt to keep black men out of the public and charter schools of America. It is deliberate. It has nothing to do with interest. If there was a program right now, Mrs. Blue, a program right now, a national model that found black men who were not teachers, who were not certified but did have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, and said, this is specifically for black males. If you come into your neighborhood and teach, we will pay off half of your student loans. All you have to do is stay for 3 to 5 years. You would have more black men than you can handle. Do you know how difficult it is for black men to get jobs out of here?
Yes.
They would willingly come into the school. They're taking care of two stones at the same time. They're taking care of their family financially, and they're giving back to the community. Do you not think they would do that? Yes, they would.
True.
The problem is the opportunities are not being extended to them, and this is by design.
Yes. So, short-term solution to get them into the school system. Let's talk about the long-term. This is what we need to do short-term. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry
for cutting you off there. No, that's okay. This is what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And all your listeners need to take heed of this. Short term, we need an independent Black Parents Association for every school district in this country. Small, large, predominantly Black, minority Black, it does not matter. You need a strong, unified body of Black parents and members of the Black community who are not parents. Because in the African tradition, remember, we're all the parents of all the children, whether we have our own biological or not. We're all parents, and we need to understand.
Right.
Even though I do not have any natural sons of my own, I only have two natural daughters of my own. I am still a father because I am responsible for every Black boy in this country. Period, point blank in the story. So when we say Black Parents Association, we should not start looking for people with natural children because we all have community children. And so we started four committees. And if your listeners have their pen and pad out, they need to write these four committees down. The first one is special education. The job of the special education committee, Mrs. Blue, is to investigate what Black children are being referred for special education testing, or what basis for what diagnosis. The job is to investigate which schools in their district are most notorious for putting Black kids in special ed, which teachers are most notorious, which principals are most notorious. They collect data. Why do they collect data? Because every marking period, they want to have a sit-down with the superintendent. Every marking period, they want to have a sit-down with their state legislators. That means state senator and state reps, Mrs. Blue, because it is the state legislators who control public education, not the federal legislators. That is your state legislators. When's the last time you heard of a Black parent having a meeting with state rep? When's the last time you heard of a group of Black parents having a meeting with the state senator? It's almost unheard of. We never ask them about what they're doing for public education. We never ask. So you need a special education committee. You need school discipline committee. What is their job? Their job is to find out which principals, which teachers, which schools are suspending the most Black boys. What are they getting suspended for? If a Black boy is suspended or expelled, or a Black child for that matter, male or female, that gets started. We are keeping hard data. We're not relying on the school district to keep our data. Why aren't we relying on the school district to keep our data? Because school districts lie. Let me say that again. I work with them. I work for them. School district lie. Why do they lie? Because they have to report that data, Mrs. Blue, and they know that if they don't meet the numbers, they will lose funding from No Child Left Behind.
Yes.
They can lose
That's
funding
right.
from Title I. They can lose funding from JRU. There's all sorts of ways that they can lose funding if they don't meet their annual goals. AYP, when George Bush signed into law No Child Left Behind, every school in America since then has been required to meet an annual yearly progress grade or goal in all areas.
That's right.
So you know what? Too many suspensions, you lose a couple million. Too many expulsions, you lose a couple million. Too many kids referred for special education, you lose a couple million. You mean
That's
to tell
right.
me they're going to give up a couple $1 million to tell the truth? They lie. Principals lie. Superintendents lie. And I'm not saying this to cast a negative light. I'm simply saying we live in a community of high-stakes testing. Public education is all about testing and data and numbers. That's all they care about. So teachers and principals are paranoid to make these numbers. You read the newspaper. You watch the TV. Twice a year, guaranteed, what do you see? This principal being brought up on charges for changing test grade. This teacher brought up on charges for giving her students the answer. Why? Because public education has become about fear and anxiety. It's a damn terrorist show.
Yeah.
Public education has become a terrorist campaign, Mrs. Blue, where nobody can teach because they're too afraid of losing their job if they don't make the numbers. And so, anyway, you need a discipline committee to track the discipline for the same purposes as a special ed committee. So when you meet with the superintendent and so when you meet with the state legislators, you can demand changes. Third committee is finance. very important committee, Mrs. Blue. Finance committee, their job is to do what? First of all, get their hands on the school budget. Item school budget, not the block budget, Mrs. Blue. I want to be clear so people know what I'm talking about. We want the line item budget. We want the budget that not only shows how much is going in a certain place, but who are specific vendors. Who gets the contract to clean the school? So you might find out a Mr. Robinson has the contract for cleaning the schools. How long has Mr. Robinson had the contract? Mr. Robinson has had the contract for 30 years. Wait a minute now. Whoa, 30 years? Wait a minute. Don't we all pay taxes to fund these schools? Yes. So if we all pay taxes to fund, why is he given exclusive domain to that contract? We got to change that. We got to change that. Instead of him having the contract for the whole district, how about he just get it for the high schools? Somebody else get it for the middle schools. Somebody else get it for the elementary school. And then we're going to put a limit on how often you have that contract. He can reapply later. But we're going to put a maximum 8 years on the contract. After that, you can't get it again until at least 8 years have passed. That's why you need a finance committee, Mrs. Blue, because they are robbing our children blind. They are robbing out. You got people out here getting contracts for after-school programs that they never even held. You got people out here getting contracts for textbooks that our children never saw.
That's right.
Public education is a racket, Mrs. Blue. It is one of the most illegal operations in America. Trust me when I tell you. They will lie about money. They will hide money. They will shift money. They will move money, and they will make you think that we ain't got no money in this school. But you notice how there's always an end-of-the-year party for the teachers. Notice how the football team always get new uniforms. Notice how the basketball team always get their court redone every season. Why is it that the principal always get a brand-new Apple laptop with the big 36-inch screen every year? Why couldn't he use the same one he had last year? And where is money coming from? Is it coming from the special ed budget? The special ed kids ain't using that computer, so why is he taking money off the special ed budget to buy himself a computer? By the way, where's the money coming from for the new football uniforms? You mean to tell me you took money out of Title I budget to pay for football uniforms?
Oh, yes.
Title I is not for football, Mrs. Principal, but they are allowed to do this, Mrs. Blue. It is one of the most illegal operations in this country, and that's why you need a finance committee to track it down, redirect the funds. And what is the fourth committee? The fourth committee that your listeners need to set up within their Black Parent Association in the town that they live is a policy committee. This brings us to how we can improve the amount of black male teachers. How do we improve it? Because we're going to do some research. And we're going to find out that out of all the public school teachers in this particular district, only 5% of them are black men. But yet, black boys represent 33% of all the students in your district. So if black boys represent 33% of all the students in the district, and you only have 5% black males, as far as I'm concerned, you should have a black male population that equals
That's
your
right.
black male student population. So we got to raise that up to 33. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to take a lot of this money that you'd be wasting every year, and you're going to do what? Create a program, a recruitment campaign, where we are going to search this country far and wide for black men with bachelor's degrees with no criminal record to come into the school, get their emergency search. We're going to pay them, and we're going to work with the government to help them erase some of their debt. That they can work with our sons. Those are the four committees that we need to get built. And then people say, well, how can we force them to do it? Through organization. When we sit down with the state reps and the state senators, we're going to make it clear. These are our demands. This is what we're working for. And if we don't get it, we're going to have to entertain the person who's going to be running against you during the election. We're going to have to entertain their public school agenda. Because guess what? If you don't put any pie on my plate between now and Election Day, I think these 5,000 votes these 500 votes, these 1,500 votes are going to be going to your opposition.
Yes.
Once we are organized and we make them understand that we are not playing, we are voting as a block of parents for the best interest of our children, you get everything you want. But the problem with Blue is that the parents have to stick together, because the public schools know one thing about black parents. Two things.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they know is we do not stick together.
Yes, so true.
They know that our children are not our priority. I hate to say this. I've been told this by white people, Mrs. Blue, to my face.
Yes.
To my Dr. Umar, I'm not trying to be racist. And please don't take this the wrong way. But can I just tell you what I feel? I really don't feel that your parents are really concerned about their children. And you know what, Mrs. Blue? A lot of them are correct.
Yes.
And I'm not just talking about poor black parents, single parents, stressed out mothers.
Right.
I'm talking about married, upper middle class.
Yes.
She's a doctor. He's a lawyer. He's a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
She's an engineer.
That's right.
He's a construction manager. She has her own business. And we're so enloped in our professional careers, Mrs. Blue, that we don't pay our children any mind. And that's why black children who were born to upper middle class black parents can end up with an educational profile that looks identical to one whose parents are strung out on drugs in the ghetto.
Yes.
You put
so
the
true.
Two profiles together, Miss Blue, they look the same. But you say, wait a minute, his parents are in the ghetto on drugs. His parents both make $150,000 a year. One of them drives a Mercedes. The other one drives a BMW. They got two swimming pools in the back of their house. In his profile, you know why, Mrs. Blue? The poor people ain't got time because they just trying to deal with their stress. And the rich people ain't got time because they trying to make more money.
Trying to make more money.
And I'm telling you, as a therapist, Mrs. Blue, I can tell you how much money the black parent make don't mean nothing to me. Where they live don't mean nothing to me. How many degrees don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing because their children are still suffering from neglect.
So true. Wow. Very, very, very profound, as everyone is saying. Lots of great information. You guys want to know what you can do. You can begin to organize these groups in your community with the people around you. And I got to tell you, I know for myself, even having children in school, it is kind of difficult because when you do go to talk to some of the other parents, these are some of the things that they constantly say, is that they don't have time. But if you don't make time now, you'll be forced to make time later. You're going to make time either way it goes. And so for me, that's a big part of my dedication and with a lot of the parents that I connect with, and these are going to be some strategies that I take to them as well, is that we do bond together to begin to start to do this. Because if you don't invest the time now, you're going to give the time later. Somebody's going to do the time, and often or not, it's our children who end up in prison doing time. But you will give the time. It will
give. Will give the time. You can go now to the parent union meeting. You can go to the school board meeting. You can go to the PTA meeting right now. Or you can go to prison two nights a week, sit in that hot, musty waiting room, go see your child. You wait for 3 hours, and you only get to see him for 1 hour. Spend all that money to send up to prison, because you know prison is a business, so when they call home, they get charged four times as much as they get charged on the cell phone. So you end up not only spending more time when they go to jail, Mrs. Blue, you end up spending more money also.
Yes.
So like you said, you're going to do the time, black parents. You can do the time now proactively by getting involved in your children's life, or you can do the time later by driving 5 or 6 hours to visit them in jail. Five or six hours for a 45-minute visit. 5 or 6 hours for a 30-minute visit. This is what's happening. And the way that they ship in prisoners all over the country, Mrs. Blue, Pennsylvania has outsourced many of their prisoners to Michigan and other places. Do you know what that means? Your son is in jail in Michigan, and you live in Philadelphia? Are you serious? Mm-hmm. You're going to have to take an airplane?
That's right, to go see your child.
Or
yeah.
You're going to have to, what, take public transport, take Greyhound or Amtrak that's going to take you about 2 days?
Right.
Or even if you get a rental car or drive your own car, you're looking at a two-day trip. And the
that's
whole
right.
time you're driving, you're saying to yourself, I wish I would have just done the right thing when they were younger.
That's right. So
but
true.
You will pay. You will.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
That's right. So true. And I want to bring everyone's attention, if you haven't had a chance to get over to Dr. Umar Johnson's website, go to www.drumarjohnson.com, and you can take a look through a lot of the products that he has there, videos and information. These are really life-changing, particularly those for the psychology, academic war against black boys, part one, part two, part three, from grade school to the graveyard, from schools to the prison pipes, all of this information there that is very, very critical for our children and also for yourself so that you can begin to take a look at it. I want us to try to get some questions in here because I know this is a big part, too, and so many people are here from all over the world listening. While we were having the discussion, one of the listeners somewhere, I believe, in Japan said a lot of the school systems of what we're dealing with now in America is one of the things that they deal with in Japan. But there is something that supports them in Japan that doesn't support us. They are collective, a culture. And so it isn't that much division there, as you can see here. So the impact of having a system like that is completely different, wouldn't you say?
Yes, indeed. I think so. And I've received some emails from some black parents in Japan and in China. Most of them are U.S. military personnel whose children are suffering the same psychoacademic war in Asia as our children suffer here in America. The racism, they say, is even more potent over there in Japan.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel for them brothers and sisters over there. I've offered, you know, to come on over there and work with them on some things, but the problem is we don't want them to get in trouble because if
right.
the government finds out they're dealing with Dr. Umar, who knows what will happen.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a sad thing. But this is a global thing. This war against
yes,
black males, Mrs. Blue, is everywhere I go. It's in Canada. It's even in the Caribbean islands because even though the teachers might be mostly black, the systems are European and the teachers
yes,
are European-minded. So it still doesn't change anything because the structure is white. It's in Africa.
Right.
It's everywhere you go.
Yes.
It's in London, England. It's everywhere this is happening to our sons. And with reference to London, I'm going to be going back there for a third time. They were asking me to come back to do some more tour stops. So I'm going to be in London, England from October 21st to November the 1st. I'll be in London, England. Most of this will be placed on my website when I get some time. You'll have to forgive me because I'll be so busy. I don't get an opportunity to update that often.
Yes, and I will check. I will definitely check because we have a large listening audience in London, in the UK, that whole area there of parents that I deal with as well and that have children that have many of those questions. So I will definitely put it out here on the remix as well.
Indeed, indeed. And there's a few other dates. I don't know if you want me to wait or if you want me to throw them out
now.
But
you can give
okay.
you can give them out now, yes.
Okay, okay. I will be in Longview, Texas, next Sunday, August the 26th. Now, where are you, Miss Blue? You're in Texas.
I'm in Austin. I'm going to come see you. You're going to Longview.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Longview, Texas. You should come on down. I'm
going to
be at 421, and this should be on my website. I'm going to be at 421 Moberly, M-O-B-B-E-R-L-Y, 421 Moberly. I don't know if there's drive or road, but the flyer's on the website, and I'm going to do two workshops there, one for parents improving their relationships with their children and another one on the psychoacademic war against black boys. One program
and
will be at 2 o'clock.
Again?
Sunday, August 26th.
Oh, wow.
Sunday, August 26th at 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock, 421 Moberly, Longview, Texas, Sunday, August the 26th.
Yes.
From there, oh, go ahead.
No.
Okay. From there, I fly to Atlanta. I'm not scheduled to do any speaking in Atlanta, but I think that's going to change. I get a lot of requests to speak in Atlanta, so I think I'm going to do something for the public while I'm there. The occasion
right.
is the UNIA 55th International Convention, the Garvey Movement.
Mm.
They have a convention
okay.
usually every summer, and so I'm going to be in Atlanta from Monday the 27th until Sunday the 2nd, that whole week. And I'm not scheduled to speak, but I'm going to do something in Atlanta. So for my Atlanta listeners,
oh.
stay in touch with me because I'm going to find a spot and I'm going to do something for free for the black community during the week of August the 27th. Where am I then? Thursday, September the 6th, it looks like I'm going to be doing a teleconference call for parents for the
okay.
RootsOfFruits.net program, LiberatedMindsEducation.com. They're based in Atlanta, and at 8 o'clock on September 6th, I'm going to be doing a teleconference call. Anyone can call in and join and ask questions. That information should be put on my website soon. It's also on my Facebook. And for those of you who are on Facebook, you can follow me on my public page. My personal page is maxed out, but my public page is Dr. Umar Ifatunde. And the simplest way to get to it is to go to my website and click the Facebook icon on my website, and that'll take you straight to my public page. Friday, September 7th, I'm in Philadelphia with Sister Pam Africa, International Friends and Family of Mamiya Abu-Jamal. There's going to be a tribute to the late, great Gil Scott Heron. Tribute to the late, great Gil Scott Heron at the Clef Club in South Philadelphia. That's Friday, September the 7th from 7 until 12. It's going to be a very powerful program. The next day, Saturday, September 8th, I'm back in Chicago, which happens to be my most requested city. I'm going to be speaking at a business summit being sponsored by the International African American Foundation. That's Saturday, September the 8th. Philadelphia, Saturday, September the 15th, myself and Dr. Phil Valentine will be doing
right.
a two-day dinner lecture followed by a community lecture. Friday the 14th, I believe, is a dinner lecture, and then Saturday the 15th, we're going to be doing a group program. Also, what do we have? I go to Charlotte, North Carolina, Friday, September the 21st, and Saturday, September the 22nd, Charlotte, North Carolina. There is a charter school down there. Principal wants me to come down there and do some work with him and also some lectures for the community. That will be my first time in Charlotte. Detroit, Thursday, September the 27th, I will be in Detroit speaking for the Empowerment in the 21st Century program. And the address is 7310 Woodward Avenue, 5 o'clock. Detroit, Thursday, September 27th, 5 o'clock, 7310 Woodward Avenue, 4th floor, Empowerment in the 21st Century. That flyer should be on my website. I may be speaking in Tennessee on Saturday the 29th. Tennessee and Saturday on Saturday the 29th. If I'm not in Tennessee, then I'll probably be speaking in New York City for Sister Jessica Marshall. She's having a panel discussion for black men who love sisters with natural hair. So that'll be on Saturday, September the 29th. Pastor Ray Hagins of the African Village invited me to be the keynote speaker for their annual convention. That will be in Chicago. That will be Friday, I believe it starts Thursday, October 4th through Sunday the 7th. And that's for Pastor Ray Hagins. Anyone interested in coming to that very powerful program he does, lots of workshops, lots of good fellowshipping. Sunday the 7th, I'll be a guest on Brother Dawai Yisrael's television show in Chicago, and we're going to do an interview on military science.
Beautiful.
And then Friday, October the 12th and the 13th, you know what? I have Phil Valentine listed twice. So you know what I think? I actually think that the Phil Valentine lecture is not on the 15th. It's not. I stand corrected. That's not September 15th. It's October 12th and 13th. October 12th and 13th is the Phil Valentine lecture. My apology. I speak at the Eagle Academy in Brooklyn, October the 18th. It's a message to the youth. Tom Joyner of the Tom Joyner Morning Show. He invited me to participate in his health festival. He's having a health festival at Temple University in North Philadelphia, Friday, October 19th and Saturday, October 20th. I'm going to have to contact Tom to let him know that I'm going to have to forego Saturday's commitment because there's a sister in Atlanta who needs me to go down there and speak for a program she's doing. But I will be with Tom on Friday the 19th before I fly to Galveston, Texas. I'll be back in Texas.
Oh, you'll be in Galveston, near Houston.
Galveston,
yeah.
National Black United Fund. National Black United Fund of Houston is having a program in Galveston at the Old Central Cultural Center, 2627
mm-hmm.
Avenue M in Galveston. Myself and Professor James Smalls, New York, we'll be on that together. And then I go to London, October 21st to November 1st. Then I'm in Los Angeles, California for the Ebonics Conference with Dr. Ernie Smith, the foremost African-American linguist in this country. He's having the Ebonics Conference at Charles Drew University. It is the furthest Western HBCU in America. Saturday, November 30, Ebonics Conference. Please come on out to that. November 10th, I'm going to be speaking at a For Sisters Only Breakfast in Jersey. Saturday, November 17th, I'm going to be doing a fundraiser dinner lecture for the Asili Museum and Institute, Cincinnati, Ohio. Friday, November 30th, Kansas City, Missouri. I go back to Texas, Dallas, December the 15th. So I got three stops, three different locations, three different dates before the new year. And then I found out 2012 going to Liberia with the Liberia organization, and I'm going to be in Liberia from Christmas Eve until New Year's Day.
Okay, you're
and
kind of
I'll
breaking up
there for,
just a little bit. I just
okay.
wanted to let just a little bit. Say the
Am
last
I okay
one
now?
Again. Yes, you are.
The last one is Liberia, West Africa. I'll be there from Christmas Eve until New Year's Day, and that will round out 2012 for me.
Oh, wow. A powerful schedule for a very powerful brother. And yes, yes, so you guys know that you definitely, I don't think there's not a place that somebody can kind of get to, no matter what part of the world you're in, so that you can participate and up close and personal and be right there hands-on with Dr. Umar Johnson. If you didn't get a chance to catch all the dates, no worries. You can actually go to the website, and the dates are there, www.DrUmarJohnson, or you can hit him up on Facebook. He's on Facebook as well, too, and you can definitely make sure you have a connection there. I want us to take a couple of calls here, if that's okay. We can go ahead and take some calls. And because I see all the callers here, 646-652-2711 is the number to call. If you have a question for Dr. Johnson, just press 1 once you get on the phone line so that we know that you're there and you have a question. And we're going to get ready to do that right after this.
La, 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 the remix. Hey, this is Baby Blue. And remember, if nothing else moves you, life will.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stop! It's the remix!
This is Blue Raspberry Wayne, and you are live in the remix.
Hey, yeah!
All right, everyone, we're going to continue. We're going to go right to the phone line. For those of you who have questions for Dr. Umar Johnson, we're going to go to the phone line. Caller calling in, it looks like, from area code 754. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 754. We'll go to the next caller calling in from area code 678. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello?
678.
You hear me?
Yes, we certainly can. Who's on the line, please?
Oh, this is Javon Holly, Miss Blue. Good night.
I'm wonderful. How are you? You had a question for Dr. Umar Johnson?
Yes, I'm Dr. Johnson. I listened to your program the last time over here, and I learned some information you gave. And I have been calling and making friends. I have some contacts out in Africa now about the things you're talking about. I want to say that I went back to my old school to do some work, for a contractor. And when I went back there, there was all these teachers there that did not represent the school's children there, and it was mostly black. It was all black school, and all the teachers there were white except for a handful, and I was very upset, and I was wondering why. And the teacher told me that a lot of times they'll send these young white teachers there, and that they would, after a year or two, then they would send them to another school in a more rural neighborhood. And after listening to you tonight, now I understand more so what's going on a deeper level. So thank you for that information. I'm going to look into your books and see, you know, what I can do. But you said about the committee, so I do have some questions, but I'm going to refer to your literature and your website, and I'll just do it that way. But yeah, I just want to say that I saw it firsthand because it was in the city of Camden, New Jersey, and there was no reason for all these teachers to be there who did not represent the children there. And I'd like to do what I can, you know, I like to teach myself, but so just thanks for your information.
Thank you very much. One thing I neglected to mention, in New Orleans, sometime before the end of this year, we're going to be having a Universal African Curriculum Conference. This is for all African people. You do not have to be an educator. We want to create an international curriculum that can be used by African people, schools, and parents, whether you're homeschooling or have your child in an institution. The school can use it, but we want a universal African curriculum that will be complete with every skill and science that we think every African child needs in order to be globally competitive in this fast-paced world in which we live. So if you fix cars, we need to create a curriculum for that. If you cook vegan food, we need to do a curriculum for that. If you cut hair, whatever it is you do, you know how to sew, we need to do a curriculum for sewing. Well, if you grow food, you do not have to be an educator. All you have to do is come and lend our expertise. We want it to be complete. We want it to be universal. We want it to be all-encompassing. And if you're interested in being a part of this weekend conference, please stay tuned to my website and my Facebook page, because we should have – we're actually securing a location now in New Orleans, and we should be up with the registration information shortly. So that will be something. Also, next summer, I'm looking at an international conference for the black man. I want all African men to come together so we can solve our issues. We had the Million Man March, which was a beautiful program put on by Minister Farrakhan, but unfortunately it didn't really have any practical programmatic items attached to it. So we want to do that at this point. You know, a grassroots conference, black men coming together, not to hear a bunch of lectures, but to actually sit down and strategize how we can collectively improve our conditions. So be on the lookout for that Universal Black Man Conference. That's going to be coming really, really soon, really, really powerful, and we want black men from all around the world to be a part of that.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. I do have a question based on the information you just mentioned. I was looking into homeschooling in the next couple of years, and I heard a lot of talk about that. Dr. Valentine speaks about a lot of parents homeschool and that a lot of kids can't read right. What is some of your advice for parents who want to homeschool specifically, and what are they doing wrong? And I know a lot of them have a good meaning behind it, but what are some of your advice for them to do it successfully?
Well, I've seen some very successful homeschool models. I've seen some home. See, here's the thing with homeschooling. Because it's only that one child or group of children, the amount of individual attention they get far surpasses what they get in the classroom with 30. So homeschooling children tend to master their academic material almost twice as quickly as children in regular school. So homeschool kids tend to graduate and finish earlier, around 13 or 14 as opposed to 16 and 17, because they were being homeschooled. So I like the model. My problem with homeschooling is some parents don't have enough time in the schedule to homeschool. And so if you take your child out of public school and declare that you're going to homeschool and you don't have enough time, before you know it, 2 years have passed and you've taught your child absolutely nothing. And I've seen those kind of cases where, take me for example, I travel the world on a regular basis. I speak in a different city every weekend. There's no way I could homeschool my daughters. Not me. It's impossible.
Right.
Now, I could be a part of the homeschooling program and supporting their mothers who are not educators. okay? I could do that, but I couldn't actually provide it myself because I'm not home enough. So we have to be realistic when we start talking about homeschooling. We can really damage our children if we're not committed to it. And then the other thing with homeschooling is you have to make sure your child gets a sufficient amount of social interaction
yeah.
with children so they don't grow up to be weirdos. And I say that sarcastically, but it's very realistic. A lot of homeschool children are socially alienated. They suffer from social anxiety disorder. They don't know how to make friends, and they don't know how to be friends because they're not used to sharing anything. So we have to make sure that they get that social, because half of our education is socialization. So if you're going to homeschool them, I support it 100%. I think academically it could be a blessing if done right, but make sure they get this social interaction. And for the record, legally, a homeschool child has a right to participate in any and all extracurricular programs held at the local public school. So even if your child is being homeschooled, if they want to be in the band, they want to be a cheerleader, they want to be in an art club, basketball team, football team, they have a legal right to participate in the extracurriculars at the neighborhood school by virtue of the parents being a taxpayer.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. So when you speak about the parents of neighborhoods getting together and organizing their own schools, are you speaking about setting up schools that would be public in nature, private in nature, for those who want to invest in their children?
It must be independent. You don't want to go charter
yeah.
because you still have to listen to the State Department of Education a little bit more than you want to. You can forget public because only public schools can be public schools, so you only can be charter, parochial, or private.
Right. I mean,
parochial is religious. I don't have a problem with it, but I'm not a big fan of it. Our children get enough religion. Okay, they need some political and cultural instruction. So I'm a fan of independent African-centered schools.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling in. We're going to go to the next caller. Calling in, it looks like, from area code 347. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello, Miss Blue.
Hello, greetings. Who's on the line, please?
This is Diane Foreman speaking. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm fine, and I also want to extend my greetings to Dr. Umar as well.
Peace and love, sister.
Peace and love. I hear a lot of what you're saying. I definitely understand it, and you're very much on point. It just seems like that in some instances, as far as organizing and making all these subsidiary groups to go into the school to try to help to infiltrate a little bit and have a little bit of control over the children. It seems like it's a difficult thing to do in today's school system because they have built these fortresses around these schools where they don't allow the parents to get but so far. Even though, yes, with all the government needing the help and assistance of all the people as far as for getting them into office, still, you know, there's still a silver lining there that still pushes us, even the parents, back. I don't know what your take on that.
Sure. I agree with you, first of all. Schools don't want parents in them. They say they do because they know we're not coming. So it's easy to bluff. They love to say, we would love to have more parents here. We want to see you. No, they don't. I work in them. They do not want to see you there, and the only reason why they talk like they want to because they know we're not coming.
You're not coming.
Now,
exactly.
We have to separate practices, okay, practices from the actual regulations policy. Practice is one thing. Policy is something else. Law is something further. Let me explain this. Practices, policies, and law. All is some by the federal government. So any law that governs the schools is made by the state, and they govern all schools in that state. But the school district is allowed to create their own policy based on the state law. In other words, one school district might say that if you commit this offense, you get suspended for 3 days. In another school, you might get suspended for 5 days. In one school district, they might say you can't start kindergarten until you're 5. Another school district might say you can't start kindergarten until you're 6. Now, all these districts are in the same state. So why is it they have different policies? because the state law allows the district to create their own policies as long
right.
as they don't undermine the state law. This is what I need you to understand, though. Even though the district creates policy, they don't create law. And because it's only a policy, they can be changed. Let me say that again. Because it is a policy, it can be changed. For example, the district might have a policy that if you get suspended twice, you got to go to a discipline school. That's not a state law. State law should only be changed at the state legislature. But if it is a policy of the district, which means it's a regulation, but it's not required by law, that's when the parents can change it. Parents have the power. Most of what you're being told can't happen and must happen is only happening because we think that the policies are the law. The policies are not the law. The policies is just that, the policy, and we have to organize to change it. The other thing is the practices. And with the practices, that's things that the schools have done through the years, and you start thinking that it's policy, and it's not. So, for example, you might have a school that doesn't let the parents come in during the school day. You want to do a dropout on your child. Principals say, I don't let that happen. Well, wait a minute. Is that a regulation, or is that your own personal preference? Because if that's the principal's preference, that can be overridden. That can be overridden by the parents organizing and telling that principal we want to drop in, or going to the school district and telling them that they want to drop in, because there's no law in most states that prevent you from dropping by to see your kids.
And
there's
I
no
hear
law
you with
against
that.
That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And when you go to the school district, then they will continue to give a problem. And then it'd be more red tape to go through. I mean,
that's because we're not organized. That's because we're not organized.
Right.
That's because you're doing it by yourself or in a small group.
Right.
Remember
well,
this.
It can be done. It can be
it
done.
It can be done.
Even
it
by
can
yourself.
Be done.
Because I know even I dealt with a situation when my daughter was in middle school and they were trying to label her dyslexia. And the school district of where I lived in, where I purchased a home, which was the school, is very close. Right around the corner from the house, they were saying, because of this school and because the school gets certain funding for science and language, that she could not continue to go to this school if she needed help in being dyslexic. The first thing I did is, because I remembered the conversation that we had with Dr. Umar Johnson, is to sit down and say, first of all, tell me what this means, and I want to see where you're getting this information from.
Right.
Well, once I did come in there, they could not prove. They said, well, she's not really dyslexic. So what is
exactly.
it? If I was
they
a parent,
right. no.
that's,
they don't have that, right.
That's right. But here's the thing. Because I fought for it, I said, here's what we're going to do. If she needs additional help, she's going to get help at the school that I choose for her to get help at. And I decided to stay on that path and that fight for myself. And what ended up happening is the child that lives next door gets bused to a school way downtown in a neighborhood he's very unfamiliar with. Same scenario that happened, but the parent did not say anything. I went to them and said, listen, we can stand together on this. We don't have to move our child because this is what they're telling us.
Right.
And so the point is we have fought against so many things as a people that we're willing to. I have seen people come to blows during Christmas time trying to get a toy for their child. But when it comes to something this important,
right.
all of a sudden all of these obstacles are too difficult to stand up and take a
right.
stand. And so we know it's going to be challenging. If it was easy, then I guess Dr. Johnson would be talking to us about something else. We know
right.
it's going to take more than just going there one time and saying that in some cases. Sometimes you do have to band together and get others. This is why this show, support systems, and knowing this information is going to be helpful. But at the end of the day, you either do it now or you do it later.
Later.
But it must be done, and it can be done.
Which is very much true. Which is very much true. But just like you did it on your own, Mrs. Blue, that's the same thing with me. I advocate for my children myself to get what needs to be done for them. But for some reason, I don't know what it is in our culture, we have a problem against banding together. We get too close
yes.
and everything gets chaotic. How does that get past that point. It just seems like an impossible barrier. Like you say, like that fortress that can't be broken down.
Well, that's it's not impossible, but we know it's not impossible because you're here and
right.
I'm here and Dr. Johnson is here. It's just about making sure, you know, someone made a comment in the chat room is that we can't use social media to get together. I disagree with that statement because where else would we know that like minds, like situations, we're able to come together? The problem, and I'll let Dr. Johnson speak after this, is not so much about the information. Information is everywhere. You can find it. It can find you. It's about the follow through. And that's the biggest part of the problem is the follow through. A lot of times we end up being armchair revolutionaries. And this is one of the things that I love about Dr. Johnson is because he does walk the talk and he does do it, you see, but he can't keep doing it alone. And he's not. So now we have to come and meet in the middle. This is a different type of middle passage that we're going through. So we have to all step up and do it. We have the solutions now. So now we have to do it. He just gave a list of dates of where he's going to be, not only around the country, but in the world. So now we got to step up and we got to do it. We can't necessarily not worry about how we're not going to do it, because if that becomes your intention, then that's where your focus is. So I just encourage you, I know it's a struggle, but to keep that mindset where you have it and just continue to know that there's others out there like you. And then this is where you choose to force your energy and connect. The situation or the organization that's going to be going on in New Orleans is a great opportunity for you to come and connect with others.
You're absolutely right, Ms. Cool, and I do thank you, and I thank you, Brother Dr. Umar, as well.
Not a problem, sis. Not a problem.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. Peace and love. I just kind of wanted to kind of put a touch on that because it can be difficult. It really can. And sometimes it does make you want to just not do anything. But, you know, we must. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 240. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, Sheila. How are you?
Greetings, Sheila.
Great. It's a pleasure. And Dr. Umar, I met you tonight for the first time. It was a pleasure. I just want to just elaborate on something early, along with what Dr. Umar was saying and the other caller. We have a major problem with parents collaborating together. We had the parent liaison one time in the school system, and a lot of parents are not coming together. That's a major problem. That's a really, really major problem. They talk, but they're not walking it. And if parents come together as collectively, a lot could take its course. But it's not happening. And it's interesting that Dr. Umar mentioned something about what's going on in the school system. I, too, have been in the school system for a long time. And you're right, between the principals and half the kids, and they sit around and they talk about putting all of our children on these strong medications, it's a problem. And it's not stopping, it's increasing even more so. And you're right, the principals do end up with fresh laptops, and at the end of the year, we have these great get-together parties and all of that. And who's left behind? We have this thing with no children left behind. They still left behind. All teachers are not teaching. They're taking a seat. They're perpetrating for the most part, but all teachers are not teaching. Do we need more men in the school system? But of course we do. We do. But we need them teaching as well. We need them to man up, and even the women that come forth. We need them to woman up, and we need them to be the mothers. We have a major problem. We talking it. How long do we keep talking? I want to know what part can I play. I don't want to just talk, and I want to do something about it. I know in every problem there is a solution. So when do we get to the solution part? Because if not, we're going to continue to keep talking this thing over and over and over again. Dr. Umar, I know about the medication. You and I personally had a conversation about, you know, young folks and medications. So what do we do about it? We know about it. What do we do about it? And then earlier you mentioned something about at the meeting, at the session. I don't have it. I made a notation. Don't have it before me. But what is it that we can do about all of our children and the bulk of them being put on these these different type of medications. And you're right, they can't even function in the classroom. And they're supposed to go forth. There's no way in the world. Parents need to get off of their behinds and do something about it.
Yes, yes.
This is sad. It's pathetic. And I hurt behind this.
Yeah.
I hurt deeply. I want to do something about it. Either we're going to be a part of the problem or be a part of the solution. Talk to me, Dr.
Excellent.
Umar.
Yes, indeed. Well, number one,
mm-hmm.
when we deal with the psychiatric medications and when we deal with the psychiatric diagnoses that lead to the medication,
mm-hmm.
it's a real simple thing for parents to do, and that is stop signing permission for the kids to be tested.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. And the second thing is stop consenting to the medication in the first place. When parents, when parents ask me, should I let my son get tested for ADHD?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I ask them one question. Do you believe in brain drugs for children? Period. Because if you don't believe in brain drugs for children, why are you letting them get tested for ADHD?
Mm-hmm.
Because the only reason why they want him late so they can force you to put him on the medication.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in our power. That's totally in our power. Every child diagnosed with ADHD was only tested with a parent permission.
Mm-hmm.
Every child on psychiatric medication is only on psychiatric medication because their parent went to a psychiatrist asking them whether
mm-hmm.
they thought it was necessary. Going to a psychologist asking them, do you think my child has ADHD? Going to the principal asking them, do you think my child got a learning disability? If we stop giving our power to people who don't even know our kids, y'all, they don't even know them. These are white people most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and we have black principals, we got black psychologists, but most of the time they don't look nothing like us.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it makes absolutely no sense. I understand why we do it, because we're out of our minds, but it makes absolutely no sense for a black parent to ask a white person what's wrong with a black child.
Okay, you're right. Again, and all what you're saying, and Lord, what you said, you're 100% right. What can be done? Because parents do sit around, and like you said, you're in the system, so you know basically how it is. I've sat there at the tables and had to become still and see children being placed on medication because we all are ignorant until we become knowledgeable. So we're dealing with a lot of ignorance, and that's the first thing they want to do is put them on the medication, but yet they're not even endowed themselves, you know, because maybe Johnny is having an issue in math, but he's strong in reading, and they're not thrusting him or her where he or she should be. And you just made another point earlier on to another caller when you mentioned home teaching. A lot of people are not even well endowed with that as far as even if a person is taught at home, they do not even know that they have the privilege and the honor that they can have access to the academics on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You powerful, boy. You good. You know, and you've heard me say this before, you got to give credit where it's rightfully due. And I want to know what role I can play that I can add, you know, and be a part of this vineyard here. I would tell my principal when he said, you know, he would say, Sheila, you're good. You're a team player, but I'm not the whole team, so I can just be part of the team. So I just want to know what part can I play.
Right. Well, I think one of the very important things that you could do, if you wouldn't mind, is take the lead in your particular school district, in your area where you are, and begin to start having meeting discussions. You can start them out as think tanks or even study groups where you just read over different articles that are appearing in the newspaper, even some of my articles if you need some. you know, and just get the parents talking first. Get him talking first.
You got to get him coming first.
Well, exactly, which is why you don't want to hit him with the work from the beginning, because we, as black people, because of our conditioning, are not naturally inclined to work for our best interests. It's something that's very foreign to us. It's natural to most people, but it's not natural to us because we come from a legacy of oppression. So expecting black people to walk in and just get to work is the quickest way to destroy your movement. When you bring them in, that first month, maybe the first 2 or 3 months, is nothing but building rapport and relationships and solidarity. So you guys come in, you might watch a movie. You might watch Waiting for Superman, The Cartel, Lean on Me, Hidden Colors. You know, you just build that rapport. Get them talking, y'all. What are some problems y'all think we got? Okay, what y'all think we need to do about? And just build them and bring more in and more in. And then after about 3 months, when you think people like coming, they like each other, they know each other, okay, y'all, it's time to do some work now. Let's pick something we don't like about the school district, and let's set out to change it. And then once that gets rolling, then you say, okay, because we're getting larger, we're going to need committees. These are the four: education, discipline, policy, and finance. Everybody sign up for one. Okay, now we're expecting you guys to start meeting once a month, in addition to our once a month or once every 2 week meet. You know, but you start them off slow. You got to start black people off with baby food when it comes to political organization, because if you give us solids, we're going to throw up and we're not going to come back.
And last but not least, your curriculum that you're putting together, will that be approved in Prince George's County and other school districts?
Well, the curriculum isn't necessarily for the use by the white school districts at all. What will happen, for example, you're a parent, you get your hands on that curriculum, and then what you're going to do is supplement. Supplement what the school district is giving your child by what we say they should be knowing. Because the difference between the universal African curriculum and the curriculum that's being given to our children now is that the curriculum that the black child receives in America's public schools is a curriculum that only has one goal, and that is to teach the black child how to work for a white person. The whole public school system is designed to teach the black child how to be a better worker for white people. The universal African curriculum is going to teach the black child how to develop their own business, how to build their own corporation, to not have to work for anyone. So it is going to be a total different focus, total different outlook, two totally different goals. One is for servitude, and the others is for liberation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Peace and love to you. Peace and love. Beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful to see so many people who really are out there and is helping and want to help more. We're going to continue here with questions for Dr. Umar Johnson. I see you guys. The phone lines are lit up, as well as questions from the chat room. But we're going to stick to the phone lines for right now. We're going to go to the next caller, calling in from area code 786. You're live in the Remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
My name is Rosalyn, and I'm calling from Miami.
Greetings to you, Rosalyn. You have a question for Dr. Umar?
Yes. First of all, I want to say greetings to you, Miss Blue, and greetings to Dr. Umar. You know, I had a son, when he was 7 years old, I was told that he had ADD. There was a group of meeting with a group of white people that were trying to intimidate me to tell me to put my son on Ritalin, and that it would slow his body down, but it wouldn't slow his mind down. I told them, I said, if it would mess with his body, it would mess with his brain. And so what I did was I took my son and I had him tested. IQ test, and he tested very high on the IQ test. So I went back to school and I said for my son, I told him, I said, he doesn't have an ADD problem. I said, he's bored because he's not being challenged enough. I said, he's going to stay in school, and you all are going to find a way to challenge him, and he will not be sent to special school. I had another friend, she had the same situation, but she didn't stand up for her son. So her son was put into special ed, and I stood up for my son because I knew there was nothing wrong with him. And I refused to be intimidated by the people that were so-called in charge.
Good
one of the things that I think that your case is really illustrating something that is not being dealt with enough, and that is the misdiagnosis of mentally gifted African-American boys with ADHD. Because the public school is designed to teach children who are struggling and who are low achievers, that a high-achieving child presents even more of a problem to a teacher than a low-achieving child. Let me say that again. A high-achieving black child is a bigger problem to a teacher than a low-achieving child. Why is that? Because the high-achieving child is going to require that that teacher use their skill and their talent to make the instruction relevant to that child. So if you have 25 students and you got 25 students and let's say 12 of them are reading on grade level and 13 of them are reading below grade level, you're dealing with average and below. Most teachers expect to deal with average and below. They don't expect to deal with average and above. So the kid who's sitting there getting finished his work before everyone else, who's totally bored, his behavior and his level of hyperactivity is going to look more pronounced than the other children because he's bored. Because he's bored. And unfortunately, too many African-American boys who are mentally gifted, who require a gifted IEP, which is a gifted individual education plan, just like the special ed students get a special education IEP, the gifted children get a gifted IEP. But the problem is racism. What do I mean by that? It's difficult for a lot of white teachers to recommend black children for mentally gifted evaluation when their own white children have not qualified for gifted. See, that flies in the face of white supremacy. For me to admit that this black child in the inner city who's getting a free education is smarter than my child in the suburb, and I'm paying $15,000 a year for them. And so we have to recognize the conflict of interest. Remember, white supremacy teaches that black people are inferior to white people. So when you have a black child who's superior to your white child, that creates confusion in your mind. And how do you deal with that confusion? Like most human beings, you deny the reality of the situation. You don't say to yourself, this black kid is sharp and I got to get him the help he needs. Instead, I'm going to blame it on ADHD. I'm going to change his gift into a curse. And even though he should be getting better instruction, instead he'll be getting better medication. I'm going to admit that this black kid is smarter than my white child.
And you know, Dr. Johnson, I want to make a comment on the people that are letting their children be put on different medication. A lot of times they will offer to give the child a check. And a lot of people are happy to get this check for them because they don't think about the long range effects this is having on their children because they're getting a check every month.
That's true. There's a lot of black parents who are allowing their children to be put on psychiatric medication so they can get the SSI check. But I want to be very clear. I do not believe that most of our children are on medication or in special ed because of that. Most of them are there because many black parents who didn't want to put their children on drugs were forced to because the school was threatening expulsion. They were threatening discipline school. See, one of our problems is, ladies, we tell the public school too much about personal business. We tell the public school too much about personal business. Once they know you're a single parent struggling to make ends meet, you got three or four children, they got you. You just told too much business. Because now they know that when they tell you that you got to come pick your son up from school because he's misbehaving, you can't afford that because if it keeps happening, you're going to end up getting fired from your job. They know this. So then they tell you, you might want to put him on medicine. And you're saying to myself, hey, I used to be on drugs. I don't want my kid on drugs. I know what that's like. And then they say, well, you're going to have to keep calling off from work to come get him. Sooner or later, you're going to lose your job. So what is it going to be? Putting him on crack, kitty crack, or your whole family goes homeless? What do you choose? And so a lot of parents have their children on medicine who don't want them on medicine, but they were afraid that if they didn't do it, their family might end up being homeless. So and the schools know this because we tell them too much of our business. Keep your business to yourself. The less you tell the school, the better. And why do I say that? Because the school is not your friend.
I work in them. The school is not your friend. The public school is nothing more than an extension of the prison. And if the public school is an extension of the prison, then that means the classroom teacher is nothing but a police officer. And just like police officers on the street, they are only concerned with how your child acts. They could care less about whether they learn or not.
I just have one question to ask. If there are people in high places passing laws to dismantle the public school, how effective would our independent Black parent organization be? I'm all for the organization. I don't have anything against them, but, you know, if people working in high places, how effective are we going to be?
Ms. Blue, can you repeat that question?
We didn't hear you. Yes, you're kind of blurred out there, and I didn't catch it either. I apologize.
I'll repeat it. If there are people working in high places to passing laws to dismantle the public school system, how effective would our Black parent independent organization be?
And
how receptive would our parents be if we had our own schools?
No, I was saying if there are people in high places that are working to dismantle the public schools, how effective will our Black parent organization be?
Well, the Black parent organization is only serving one purpose, and that is to try to reduce the oppression as much as possible until we have our own schools. The Black parent organization is not going to stop the elimination of public schools. But as long as the public schools are here, they are there to maximize the benefit that our children receive from those schools. Ultimately, those same Black parent organizations that fight for our children to receive a better education through the four committees in public school are also going to have to be responsible for building the independent school that should be operating before the public schools fully and completely shut down.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson. Keep up the good work. And
thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling in. All right. We're going to continue here. How you doing? Everything good? You're still hanging in there. I know you had a very full day today, Dr. Umar Johnson. Are you still with us?
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Blue. What did you say? I'm sorry. I thought you were speaking to a caller. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I said, how you doing? We still doing okay? How you
yes,
feeling?
Yes, ma'am. I'm doing okay.
I know your day has been long, and it really is an honor to have you here on the platform. You give so much, and you do so much here. So we're going to continue. We have about 40 minutes left to go in the forum. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. I know you guys are saying the phone lines are full. We're going to try to get to all the questions here. But if not, you know how to reach out to Dr. Umar Johnson. You can simply go to his website and find the contact page there so that you can send your questions. If you need to have any type of consultation, maybe you're dealing with a situation. You know, school is starting up for most of us here that live in the West, in America, and maybe there's some things that you want to get a handle on before it gets too far into the school year or too far out of control. You can contact Dr. Umar Johnson at www.drumarjohnson.com. You can find all the information there, contact information there, and reach out and let him know your situation. So we're going to continue right here. We're going to go to the next caller. It looks like calling in from area code 301. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, is that me?
That is you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. This is Brother B.A. I thank you for taking my call, Ms. Blue, and to Dr. Umar Johnson. Brother, it's always a pleasure when you're on Blog Talk because you spur so much intellect, not only by the jewels that you give us, but by the calls that come in. It's rare. I'm just telling you, I'm calling you from Maryland, and it's rare to hear Black people talk of substance when it comes to education or when it comes to leadership, when it comes to anything, really. And I agree with what you said initially at the start of the show, that we do engage too much in idolatry or iconography. And this is my opinion, most Black organizations are nothing but glorified booster groups, boosting up their man, you know, and want everybody else to love them like they do. But there's very little accountability. Let me say this, brother. I love your four committees, okay? I love everything you said, particularly about this whole issue of class, that how it's hard to distinguish academic achievement between two-income families or single-parent households and all. I'm with you on that 100%. And nobody really, anyone talks about that. But let me add this about black male teachers, all right? Because I hear that a lot. And I've been hearing it for 30 years, okay? If black male teachers were going through the Dr. Umar Johnson Academy for Black Male Teachers, like black superintendents go through the Broad Superintendent Academy out in L.A., then I say I'm with you, okay? But because you got a black male there, that don't mean nothing, okay? Black nationalism is absent, and black male teachers are subjected to the same terrorism, the same constraints as everybody else. You just absconded. You're in Philadelphia. Philadelphia just absconded with our superintendent here. He's a black male. You gave him a king's ransom, millions of dollars, to come to be superintendent, black male. I give you 5 years, 10 years, whatever the length of his contract. And at the end of the day, black students aren't going to be in any better shape than they are today. I promise you that. I promise you that. Because black males, black students in PG County are in no better shape than they were when he got here. And they beg to keep them. So futility is rewarded in our schools. I think I agree with you, brother, in terms of what parents should be doing. But getting them there and getting these magical outcomes that we think we can get simply by having somebody of a similar hue, I wish I could get on board with that. But too often when I stand up, and I say, you know what we need to do, y'all? First thing we need to do in this school system is raise the standards. Who you think step up in front of me and say, when I say we need to raise the standards for basketball, football, we need to test our kids for dope, who you think get in my way? It's the black teachers. It's the black parents. When you say and you do something progressive and you black, it's like a Pavlov's dog. Black folk don't say nothing until you say something progressive. And then we step up, and we want to fight and beat you back. So parents out there, if you care about education, along with the four committees that Dr. Umar Johnson spoke of, you also got to put your money where your mouth is. You got to spend money on your parents, on your children's education. You got to seek alternative means. You got to, in order to make them competitive. Because I don't see it happening from the schools. And you just can't sit by and let your kids fail. You got to do the same thing that the Koreans are doing with Kumon, what the Jews did to master those SAT tests with Kaplan, what the Indians are doing today, and what the Hispanics are doing out in Texas, Arizona, and California, and New Mexico.
Mm.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. Everything you said, I'm with. And I don't necessarily disagree with you, Dr. Johnson. No, that's not why I'm coming. I'm just saying my experiences, you thank people with you, you know, or you think because somebody black, they feel they empathize with you. But I see it in the reverse a lot of times, brother. I'm telling you, it's crying shame, man. When the black man come there, oh, man, he don't know anything about the pains and struggles of blacks in education. He don't want to hear that. He there to educate all the children, and he don't want to hear and talk about no black males. I've seen that, brother. Thank you. Thank you, Miss Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, my brother. That, I agree with everything that my brother said. I don't think we actually disagree. I just think I need to add some clarity. And what I mean by that is the superintendent situation is a whole lot different from the black male situation. Let me first say that in order for us to have effective black male teachers, they have to be put through a rigorous rigorous screening process. They have to be. I am seeing an influx of black male teachers, Ms. Blue. I'm seeing some, but the problem is all of the new black young teachers I'm seeing, most of them, are homosexual.
Right.
Like when I go, for example, school starting up. So this is the time when I start going around and do my professional development for teachers. And they introduced me to the new teachers who weren't there last year. And when they introduced me to the new black male teachers, 9 out of every 10 are homosexual. So I'm saying to myself, what is going on here where all of the new black male teachers are gay? But I know what's going on, Ms. Blue, because the gay black male is not threatening to the social order. Even when you look at higher education, even when you look at our colleges, HBCUs and white schools, most of the black male professors, especially the ones who are department heads, they are very effeminate, if not gay. Very effeminate. They exude no masculine energy whatsoever. Why? Because a lot of our black males are subconsciously taught by their mothers, even their fathers, but definitely by the system. If you want to make it in the world as a black man, then you better perform and conduct yourself as if you were a black woman. Because if you come off strong, assertive, aggressive, self-confident, then you're going to be considered a threat, and the system will move to get rid of you. White men are threatened by self-confident black males. And so unless you are effeminate, it's difficult to
meet.
And so a lot of black men are voluntarily effeminizing themselves on purpose so they can fit into the clique of the order. So we got to recognize that. Now, the one thing I wanted to say about the superintendency is this. The brother's correct. A superintendent is like a president. You work at the mercy of the local school board. All superintendents in America work at the mercy of the local school board. They hire you. So you know that if you step out of line, you're going to get fired. Your contract can be terminated at any time. Yes, you get a severance package, but it doesn't look good on your resume.
Right.
And so most superintendents, especially the black ones who give a damn, they are walking on pins and needles because they know the slightest ripple in the water can cost them their job. Let's look at Philadelphia. Arlene Ackerman, who came from D.C. and she was in other places, Harvard grad. She wasn't the greatest, but she was sincere. I knew her personally. We had conversations. She wasn't the greatest, but I do believe she cared about our children, and she did a lot of good things for the children in Philadelphia. And I'm not one to give praise when it ain't due. Believe me, are there a lot of things I think she should have done? Of course.
Right.
I know for a fact that the number one thing that needs to be done in any school district where our children dominate is there need to be an office. And I want the listeners to hear me. Every school district should have an office of black male success. Every last one. An office whose job is to do nothing else but make sure the black males graduate, stay out of special ed, off drugs, and out of trouble. That's the whole job. Total commitment to that. If I was Arlene Ackerman, that's exactly what I would have done. But me and her are two different people. And I'm not knocking my sister because I loved her for the few good things she did. But the one thing, if you notice when you look around the country, the one thing you never see black superintendents do is deal with the racism.
No.
Deal with the racism that is destroying our black boys. I don't know of a superintendent yet, and I've met many. I work with many. They call me on a regular basis for advice. Some of them I can't even say they do because they'll get in trouble. But they call me for advice on a regular. But Mrs. Blue, not one of them. I don't know of a black superintendent in America who has created an office for black male student success to make sure they survive and make sure they thrive and make sure they succeed. So you mean to tell me black males have the worst outcomes in America and there's not a school district in this country with an office or officer whose sole job is their success? We're talking the talk, but we're not walking the walk.
Walking the walk, yes. So true, so true. Very good. Very good point. Yes. Yes. We're going to continue. So many people on the phone lines and so many questions coming in. for Dr. Umar Johnson and this very needed discussion here. We're going to go to the next caller. It looks like calling in from area code 347. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 347?
No, Miss Lou, that's Diane again.
Okay, Diane. All right, continue to hold. All right, calling in, I'm sorry, the other 347. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Good night, Miss Blue and Professor Mark Johnson. My name is Vikita, and I'm calling in from New York.
Good evening.
Hi, I called in to share more of an experience and also a question. Matter of fact, the first question I have, brother, is can you explain the difference between discipline and punishment?
Yes, indeed. Well, punishment is actually a form of discipline. Punishment is one of the strategies that is used to improve discipline. Most discipline programs have both punishments and reinforcers, or what we call rewards. So when your child does something that they weren't supposed to do, they automatically get a punishment or a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
When they do what they're supposed to do, then they get a token of a reward to come. So in order for an effective discipline program to work, you have to have both of them. You have to have consequences or punishments, and you must have rewards or reinforcers. But let me tell you where we mess up as parents and teachers. We don't understand that punishments or consequences should be given each and every time that the child commits the offense that they shouldn't be committing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest mistakes I see with parents and teachers, and especially the female parents and teachers, and I'm not picking on the women, but because y'all are the carriers of the children and you're so nurturing and so loving that y'all have a difficult time being disciplinarians because of that. And so what happens is when a child does something that requires a consequence, instead of getting the consequence, we give them a warning. And two warnings, and three warnings, and four warnings. And what I need y'all to understand is warnings are worthless. Warnings are worthless. If a child does something they had no business doing, either punish it or leave it alone, but don't warn. Because the minute
right.
you start warning, you now allow the child to decide whether what they did was bad enough to warrant a consequence. We don't want children creating types of bad behavior, levels of bad behavior. Because once that happens, they now don't know whether they should do it or not because they don't know if it's bad enough. If it's bad, it's bad. Give them the consequence. Don't keep on giving warnings because warnings are worthless. What the warning says is what you did was wrong, but it wasn't wrong enough for you to suffer for it. You don't do that. You cause confusion that way. And then with the reinforcers, that's the other mistake that we make. Listen to me well, parents. Listen to me well. You punish every time they do something wrong without fault. No warnings. You say why? Because if we're trying to exterminate a bad behavior, you don't exterminate it by giving it life. Warnings is giving it life. You knock it out. So every time they do it, they get that punishment. That's how you destroy the bad habit. Now, when they do what they're supposed to do, they are not to be automatically rewarded every time. If a child is rewarded every time they do something right, why would they ever improve? If I'm going to get paid every time
That's
I do a little bit of work, why do the whole work for? If you're going
That's
to get
right.
your paycheck for one day work, why do I do work for a whole week? It doesn't make any sense. So what happens is with the rewards, parents, the child has to work towards a certain goal in order to receive the reward. Rewards are not random. They come on a predetermined fixed schedule. Punishments are random. Whenever they happen, they get it. But with the reward, it's on a fixed schedule. In other words, you need 3 good days out of 5. In other words, you need 7 good days out of 10. In other words, you need 5 good classroom periods out of 8 for the whole day.
you need one good day out of three. They have to work towards it so they don't get rewarded every time they do something right. They only get rewarded if they meet the criteria. The criteria is, I don't want to hear from your teacher no more than twice this week. If I hear from them three times this week, that's considered a failure, and you're going to get a consequence. Please make sure that you are rewarding on the schedule, not rewarding every time they do something right. Also keep in mind, never use money. Never use money. I'm coming across too many mothers who are paying their sons to behave. Good behavior is an obligation. It is a responsibility. Exactly. I am not going to pay you to do what you're supposed to do. Furthermore, I need y'all to understand that all rewards run out of power after a certain amount of time. Do you know what that means? Punishments do too. Both rewards and punishments run out of steam. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. School starts up soon. For some of us, it's already started. So what's working in September as a punishment or a reward may not be working by December. What's working in December won't be working by March. What's working in March won't be working by June. So as a good parent, good teacher, you're automatically brainstorming replacement punishments, replacement rewards, because you know what they're working for now, they won't continue to work for later. And the reason why you don't use money and expensive gifts is because we know that the reward is going to lose its power after a couple of months. So if you've given your son $5 every Friday for not getting in trouble in school, and he's only in the third grade, what do you have to pay him in the fifth grade, Miss Blue? What do you have to pay him in the seventh grade? By the time he's in the 10th grade, he's getting $200 a week, and by the time he's in 12th grade, you're going to owe him his, your whole paycheck, because you set up a game that you can't win. Don't pay for good behavior.
That's right.
Exactly. I agree. The reason why I had asked that, and also another follow-up question is, being that, okay, at 12 years old, because my experience, I have five children, and I am currently a single mother. And the first time that I had spoken to just someone who was in the psychology field and left because he could no longer take the children being on medication and knowing the side effects of the medication that the medications was causing. And we spoke and he expressed to me that the first thing he asked me, where was my family? Where was my support base? And he said that to say that I was up in Syracuse with my children by myself and didn't have any family. And I was in church, but the church didn't have a strong children focus, a strong children's church, put that way. And he was like, well, you need to get somewhere where there's more parents, more active with the children, and you're not by yourself, so you're not in there with the frustration. Because although I was grown up with West Indian parents, you know, for me, not everything that you beat your child for, you can be able to take away things, talk to them. Some other things, like you said, disciplines, punishment, everything should change, should have a different course that it should be taken for itself. And also, as well as the rewards, I agree with all of that. But where I'm coming from is my son. I remember
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I've got so much questions, but my son in particular, they was telling me that, oh, he needs to be tested for ADHD. So, again, with this other psychologist that I had spoken with, he was like, listen, there's no test that they can prove to say that a child has ADHD or whatever or not. You know, he's like, go ahead and challenge them. And although I did with the little bit of information that I do have, you know, it came out to be true. What tests can they give to children? Because like you said before, it's like you go into the therapist and it's like you giving them information about your child and they're giving you secondary information. So how solid is that? How and like you said, giving up our power and our right as a parent. You know, who nurtures the children? Who cares for them? Who knows them intimately? Just say, well, do my child have this, have that? And he was like, listen, you go ahead and you sign them over, and the medication that they give you for the children, you might as well have them on, I guess, coke or heroin or whatever, because that's the mixture of the medications combined in order to keep the children under, I guess, behavior, so to speak. But I guess my question is, at what age should we stop trying to beat the children, you know, because is it like a time period? Because he was telling me like around age 12 years old, you can no longer want to beat your child, like you should do something else. So this is my question.
Okay. Here's my position on punishment. I am not one of these new era psychologists who believe that a child should never be spanked. That is not me. Okay, when I was growing up, I got spanked sometimes. Most of us did,
yes,
and it served
us
well. So I am not against it. But it should not be the first punishment that we consider when the child does something wrong. A child should be spanked rarely and only when it's absolutely necessary, but it's rare. It's rare. If every time my child does something I don't like, I'm smacking her. First of all, I have two daughters, so I'm not touching them at all because I don't ever want them to think it's okay for a man to put their hands on a woman. But let's say I had a son. Let's say I'm plucking him in the back of his head or, you know, smacking him on his behind or whatever I'm doing. Every time he does something wrong, I shouldn't be doing that. That leads to child abuse. Punishment, physical punishment, should not be your primary strategy of discipline. It should not be. Because taken too far, it becomes abuse. It affects the child's self-esteem, okay?
Yeah, well,
it's not good. Once in a while, you say, well, I pop my son once in a while. I pop my daughter once in a while. You know, she did something really, really bad, and I spunked on her butt. She stole from her friends, for example, hypothetically speaking. Okay, I could understand because that was something serious, what she did, and because it was a once-in-a-lifetime infraction, the punishment was once in a while. You see, the punishment should match the crime. You see, so you might say, you know what, for what he did, he got arrested, he going to get his behind whipped. You know why? Because getting arrested is extremely serious, and you don't expect it to happen again, so he'll get his spanking, and he knows better. But if you spanking him for everything, if you smacking him for everything, that's child abuse. That's not discipline.
Exactly. I agree. Because even with the teachers, I remember I am the type of parent to sit in the school, and you are correct. The teachers and the parents, I mean the teachers and the people on the Parents Association Board, I believe, they become intimidated by your presence just being there. And I remember, like, okay, I'm in the parent room, and they will call me, my son up. So I take my son, excuse him from all the eyes, the wondering eyes, because I guess they expect, being that I'm black, that I would just automatically want to beat my child up. Why? Why should I just want to automatically want to slap him and then you want to come slap me with a child neglect case? You understand? And have other these nice people coming into my home and asking me what is my issue? Because for one, I'm a single parent. You understand? So I was like, no, why would you expect that? You know, there's supposed to be some form of communication, and I do agree, like once in a while, because how effective do the beatings become? You know, I'm not going to say that I don't get frustrated, but one thing I'm not going to do is talk about my children.
I hear something that, and I hear you, and we do have to move on because we have other callers, but a great point that you brought up and an excellent question as well. I know one of the things that I've seen is that a lot of parents wait until children have already formulated their own set of rules and who they are before they try to discipline. So you let them do whatever they want until they get 7 or 8 years old, when really a child has already begun to formulate who they're going to be in this world based upon a lot of things that have influenced them. And so then the child gets old enough to go out and connect with other people, and now it becomes embarrassing to take them out. It becomes embarrassing because your child won't listen to you, even in the point where they could be a life-threatening situation for themselves. And so now you want to spank them, you want to beat them, you want to do all these things to them because you didn't give them sort of those core foundations that should have been given to them from the time of birth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you, Mrs. Blue.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I often tell parents that if you are spending too much time physically punishing children, it's because you did not spend enough time being consistent with the discipline in the primary years. When those children, particularly from 3 to 5, you know, that's when children start to learn what they can get away with.
Right.
From 3 to 5. And then from 5 to 8, they start developing
mm-hmm.
their own unique characters and ways of
that's
acting.
Right.
And all of this is shaped by what we let them get away with. You have to
that's
condition
right.
your children. But a lot of our children are allowed to run rapid, do whatever they want to do. And then when they
mm-hmm.
get older, okay, because
yeah.
we never taught them respect, we never taught them discipline, now we're physically trying to control what they do because we never put
that's
in the
right.
necessary time. Okay, to teach them the discipline early on. Remember, discipline is the art of teaching children how to
mm-hmm.
do what they don't want to do because it's going to be necessary in order for them to survive in this world. It's an
beautiful.
Art. Our children, especially
yeah.
black children, especially
mm-hmm.
black boys, they have to be taught how to do what you don't want to do because it's important. We have so many children now who don't do anything unless they like it. That is insane. They don't go to
yeah.
school unless they like it. They don't clean their bedroom unless they
unless
like it.
They
don't
like
listen
it.
To
yeah.
their parents unless they like it.
Right.
Who do you know in life has ever gotten anywhere by only doing what they felt like doing?
Doing.
Discipline
right.
is the art of teaching your children that you're going to have to do what you don't want to do in order to be in a position to do what you would like to do. Black
right.
boys do not get second chances. We know this. Black boys
right.
don't get second chances. So why is he getting second chances in your house, third chances in your house, fourth chances in your house? You are setting him up to believe
yeah.
that no matter what you do, there's always a way out, and that's not the way the world works for black men. They
it.
Don't get a second
it's
chance.
Not.
So in our homes, we are setting them up to be exterminated and oppressed by the system because we are leading them to believe that they will always be able to talk their way out of a situation until they find out that that ain't the way the world works.
Yes, so true.
Be consistent
so true.
With those boys. Be firm with those boys. That's right. Mothers, stop babying your sons up. Y'all got to
yeah.
stop doing well, his father's in jail. His father's dead. His father's not in his life. Guess what? I'm sorry that happened to him. If he needs
yeah.
some therapy, let's get him a therapist. But you cannot sacrifice the need to teach that boy discipline because you feel guilty about who his father is.
Yeah.
Because you're going to feel even more guilty if you don't teach him how to be a man, and the next thing you know, he's in and out of jail, can't keep a job, dropping out of school, a million kids he don't take care of. It's amazing because
right.
I hear so many women say that so many of our boys are irresponsible because their fathers taught them that to be that. Not true. The fathers weren't in their life.
It's
the mothers who are raising these boys. And guess what, ladies? With all due
yeah.
respect, many of you are raising your sons to be the worst possible husband another woman could have.
Yes.
It
so
is
true.
You who their wives are to blame. So many of our boys
right.
have been so spoiled by their mothers that they're looking for a woman who's going to be just like her, somebody who's going to work, leave them at home, and don't expect them to clean or nothing. Don't expect them to get a job or nothing like that. I run into women who are dealing with men like this all the time. He wants
yeah.
another mother, and I ain't his mother.
Right.
Mothers,
or looking, for a man. Or looking
exactly.
for a man.
Or looking for a man. Exactly. We do a
yeah.
good job with our daughters. Women do a good job with their daughters. They raise their daughters to be strong, independent. Don't be having no babies out of wedlock. Get your education. Don't let no man take advantage
right.
of you. You understand? But then you look at your son, he on the couch. Playing video games all day. Your daughter got an after-school job. Your daughter got a summer job. Your daughter got accepted to college. She's getting scholarships. And what is he doing? Sitting his ass on a couch, eating and playing video games, and you okay with that. And why are you okay with that, black woman? Because too many of you, and I'm not downgrading you, I just want to raise your awareness. Too many of you are objectifying your son
as the absentee mate. Objectifying your son as the absentee mate, not sexually, but psychologically, he has become the man of the house. And just like you wouldn't necessarily tell your husband what to do, your son has become your husband, and so you don't feel comfortable telling him what to do.
So true. So true. Good words. Good words that definitely needed to be heard. So true. Yeah. We're going to continue. We have about 8 minutes left to go in the forum. We're going to try to take one more call. We're live here with Dr. Umar Johnson, everyone, live in the forum. It's always a pleasure to have you on the platform, to have you come and share with us. Make sure you definitely go to his website, www.drumarjohnson.com, and definitely you can find out how to connect with Dr. Johnson, how you can connect with his work, find out where he's going to be, if he's going to be near a city near you, if you want to get a consultation, if you have a group or something that you want to begin to put together in your community, your schools. Wherever you're working, you can find out all of that information by going to the website and definitely connecting with them there. So we're going to try to take one more call here as we get ready to close out. Calling in, it looks like, from area code 860. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello, I'm Eric from New England. My question, y'all guys hear me good?
Yes.
Okay. My question, like Omar states before, is like even with the school system, if you look at even the majority of the student body, which majority is white in certain areas, because we're here in New England, and it's probably the same everywhere in the 50 states, is even with parents trying when they hear these whatever it's time about what's wrong with their child, it critically doesn't come to the back of the mind that, you know, these are people that don't even same color as you, much less worry about, say, you asking them what's wrong with your child. So, Omar, my question to you, you think because the conditions of the psyche that most of our people go through makes them think that, say, that Europeans have their answer to say how to correct their own child's problem?
Give me that question one more time.
Let me rephrase it. Because of black people's state of mentality, because I like to call it mentality, usually it goes back from how we've been conditioned for so long. They, in their own mind, feel so because of a certain individual time, what's wrong with their own child, and it's not the same color as your own child, but most likely white, when they diagnose them with these so-called symptoms or, you know, issues, brain activities, or what they call it, that they have the authority to say, you know, we might have to give them this and that. My question to this is, say, how am I going to say this? How is it that you feel, say, why even black people even feel comfortable to go ahead at times, feel, say, whatever they say is the authority, say, that to correct their own child's problem? Instead, I don't know if I'm clear with the question.
I think so. One of our problems, nobody has any business telling us how to raise our children. And I'm very serious about this, black people. Our children are going to have the hardest time of any child in this country making their way. The boys and the girls. We have been the victims of racism, oppression, Jim Crow, you name it. White people ain't got. Isn't it ironic that the people who provide the greatest obstacles to our children are telling us how to raise them?
Yeah, ain't that
you ain't got no business telling me how to raise my child, and we got to stop letting them tell us how to raise our child. When they tell you your child needs medicine, they're telling you how to raise your child. When they say your kid got ADHD, they're telling you how to raise your child. White people ain't got no business telling black people that their children got disorders based on their own cultural frame of reference and not ours. And they ain't got no business telling us how to raise our children, and we got to stop letting them do that. Stop giving other people the power to determine who your child is, what they should be doing and what they need, you have to keep that power. If there's anything that you should never give up, it is your right to parent your own children. And I see us giving that right over to the school. We're giving it to the psychologist. We're giving it to the psych. Stop doing that, black parents. You are the parent. Never relinquish that power, because if you give it up, if you give it to the psychologist, you give it to the psychiatrist, you give it to the social worker, and then you don't like how they're raising your children, and you try to step in and stop the drugs, stop the medication, it's too late. They will take your children from you. I know families in America right now who don't have their children at home because they stopped giving them the medication. And Child Protective Services came in and took the children. It's called medical neglect, black people, and this is real. They are taking black children from parents who started giving them the brain drug and then stopped. I'm asking you not to give them the drugs in the first place. If you think he's too hyper, if you think he's too inattentive, then first put him on a sugar fast for 3 months. All that caffeine, sugar, and high fructose corn syrup out of his system first. That's what you do. Then you look for any psychological problems that might be under. Is he missing his father? Was there death in the family? Is there sexual, physical abuse? Are you spending enough time with your children? Because any of these things will look like ADHD in school. If a child ain't getting enough attention, they automatically become the class clown.
That's right.
And then if you rule that out, then what do you look at? You then look at going to the herbal store and getting one of the very plentiful herbal formulas that's been created by so many different naturalist homeopathic companies to deal with hyperactive behavior. There's a product called Be Calm. There's a product called Melissa Supreme. There's a product called Calm-Tra. These are herbal formulas that you drop under the tongue of the child, and they have the same effect as Ritalin, Adderall, Strattera, Depakote, Risperdal. You don't need to give them drugs. All you got to do is go to the health food store, take them off the sugar, make sure you spend enough time with your children, because the truth of the matter is, Ms. Blue, a lot of our kids are not getting enough lap time, enough love and attention from their parents.
Oh, so true. So true. Yeah, that's so true. Or we want them to be so grown so fast and, you know, trying to make them tough when they don't need to be tough in certain areas. But you're right, that is so true. We have about 1 minute left to go, and everybody is just jumping up and down. We do have access to the after hours. Again, I know you've been here for a very long day. We have lots of callers. I would like for you to give us sort of some closing words as we close out with those who are not on the phone line, because we have over hundreds of people on the phone lines, but still thousands that are listening that won't be able to participate in the after hours should we go. But I definitely will leave that up to you. I'm just very honored for you to come on. I know that this has been a very long day for you. We can keep going if you like. It's completely up to you, but I would like for you to
Yeah, we can go until one.
Yay! There you go, you guys. So, you got your answer. A brother who gives so much. Dr. Umar Johnson, you guys. For the rest of you, if you like the show, I want you to like it. If you love it over on Facebook on the Remix group. And also connect with Dr. Umar Johnson on Facebook as well. Leave a comment as well. Don't forget to go to Dr. Umar Johnson's website, www.drumarjohnson.com. And we're going to continue here live in the Remix. So download, download, download. And for those of you on the phone line, we're going to continue as well with you right here. I see your hands up. You have many, many questions, and we're going to try to keep going. So we're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 510. You're live in the Remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name's Tanya, and I'm actually calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay, great.
And I just wanted to say, first of all, Dr. Umar, your lecture tonight was awesome. Well, actually, I guess now technically it was yesterday. But it was really great. The 20 points, the document that you talked about was right on hit for me, so I really appreciated that. My question is kind of, I noticed tonight with a lot of the questions from the parents, a lot of people are asking you things about what to do, you know, after your child has been, you know, improperly or diagnosed as having some kind of problem. But what I don't hear a lot of people talking about is
what you can do as a parent before. And in particular, I'm talking about the food that we're feeding our kids. You know, you kind of touched on it earlier during the lecture about the Monsanto Corporation and things. I don't hear a lot of Black parents talking about the fact that the foods that we're giving our kids, especially when they're preschool or pre-education, when they're, you know, like 0 to 5, when they're going into kindergarten now, 3, 5. A lot of people, especially Black people, don't seem to be talking about the health risks that they put their kids in, that I personally think are contributing to some of this high diagnosis of ADHD and these other so-called problems that our kids are having. And I wanted to know your thoughts on why, you know, do you think that Black people are even acknowledging that this is a contributing factor to why our kids are coming out, you know, with so many problems, and how come people really aren't talking about it?
Well, I agree. I don't think we're looking enough at diet. We have record numbers of Black obese children, diabetic children, children who are being put on dialysis as a result of medical complications coming from a poor diet. I do not think we're looking at that as seriously as we should. I totally agree with you on that point. However, I would want to discriminate, though. And what I mean by that is poor health is a big problem in the Black community overall, with children and adults. Poor diet is killing us to death. We are literally raising an entire generation off fast food, which speaks to your point. Because if you look at the rise of ADHD, you see two things that actually correlate with that rise. You see a rise in the mass incarceration of their fathers, so the fathers are being taken from the homes. So that's from a socio-psychological standpoint, psychosocial. And then you also see the rise in fast food, okay? So you have your psychological contributor, and then you have your dietary contributor, and they are equally devastating. So I couldn't agree with you more. We have to stop raising our children on bad food, because here's the thing. If you're eating bad food, it's difficult to concentrate. If you're eating bad food, it's difficult to sit still. If you're eating bad food, you can't focus in the classroom. So without a doubt, diet has a very big role to play in this whole situation. But I would also say that I think the psychological problems are more responsible for the rapid rise in ADHD than the diet ones. The diet is key. I am not undermining it at all. I'm simply saying that as it relates to the school setting, it's more psychological, I'm finding. I'm finding that a lot of the kids who are being put on the drugs, sex abuse victims, verbal abuse, physical abuse, father not in the life, mother not in the life, foster kids, adoptive kids, child runaways, children who are dealing with death. They lost people in their life who they love, or their parents don't think it's important to get them a grief counselor. Children who are being bullied by relatives and being bullied by other children. Feeling left out, socially ostracized. Feel like their mother don't love them. Daddy don't love them. Daddy is remarried. Yeah. His wife don't like me. Mommy is remarried. Her husband don't like me. He treat his own son good and treat me like dirt. I'm finding it's the psychological stuff more than the diet as it relates to school particularly that's contributing to these problems. But diet is definitely a close second, without question.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you
for calling in. All right. We're going to go to the next caller. Calling in, it looks like, from area code 678. You're live in the Remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Greetings. You're live in the Remix.
Greetings, Ms. Blue, and peace out to Brother Umar. I would like to touch on something that you said earlier, Brother Umar, because I live in Atlanta.
What's your name, please? What's your
My name is Corey Newell.
Okay. Greetings, Corey.
All right. I would like to touch on something Brother Umar said earlier. I live in Atlanta, and I moved from New York to Atlanta. And I realized something down here, that they don't give a brother a job who know his stuff and stuff. Like, and I tell a brother, I say, yo, something's not right here. All the women got jobs, but when you go for a job and you stand up and speak manly, they don't give you the job. So I was working at this job, and I told this young lady one day, I said, look, I went for this job. I don't know why they didn't hire me or whatever the case may be. I said, but I noticed something about this company. They only hire gay men, women, and white men. She said, oh, you tripping, man. You tripping. So a couple months later, about 4 months later, she came to me. She said, you know what? You was right. She said, I thought you was tripping at first, but that's what I see at the job. I said, well, that's not the only thing I see. I said, I guarantee you Eddie Long was going to be taking gay guys in his church not too long after this thing blew over. And she said, why do you feel that way? I said, it's because I've seen how it's set up. It's like, if I'm a man and I'm speaking, I want to take care of my family. They don't like that. Now, I was in a meeting with this company, and I told them exactly how I felt. Man, 2 days later, they told me I had to leave. Now, I laugh at it because when they gave me an award, they gave me an award for making them $12 million a month. So I wasn't tripping off of that because I already know I can go anywhere in the world and work, you know. I was just so confident in myself, and I refused to bow down to what they wanted me to do. So as time went on, I didn't say nothing. They come back at me, said, well, we'll make you an offer. I said, no, I don't want your offer. I said, I'd rather just do what I've been doing. So I walked out. A lot of people say, so why did you do that? I said, because really, I don't really sweat the industry is because I already did what I needed to do for the industry already, and for the rest of my life, they're going to pay me. And, you know, a lot of times when I go to the job, they'd be like, well, this black man is acting arrogant, or I'm not acting like the average man that acts in Atlanta, because I feel like the men down here be, excuse my language, pussyfooting. They don't stand up for themselves. And so, with that being said, Umar, I agree with you a lot. I got to meet you in person. I got to see you speak, and I was very impressed that somebody is bringing these issues out, you know. And I respect you so much, man. It's just like I say, yeah, this brother is on. And every time the first time I really got introduced to you was through YouTube. It's through Hidden Colors. And then I started following you on YouTube. And everybody I showed you could not agree more with what you were saying. Who have, a conscious mind, a common sense, I should say. And I just wanted to ask you, bro. I had got another offer, and I want to help with what you got going on. But I told brothers like this, I got an offer to go work in Africa and build their network for them. And I said to myself, I don't think I'm coming back. I really don't think I'm coming back once I get over there. It's because I know how to build a house. I know how to build electrical. I know how to do all the things in which make for your survival. So the brother said, why are you not coming back? I said, brother, there's nothing here for me to do. If somebody give me something, a sense of something to do here, a sense of something to follow, I don't think I'm coming back. And I think I'll just be over in Africa chilling with my people, waving at y'all across the water, because I'm just that fed up.
Hello? My brother, definitely. I'll be honest with you. One of my long-term goals, or not so long-term goals, is to relocate to Africa. I mean, I love it. You know, being a Garveyite, I totally believe in repatriation. I really think that if we're going to build something to last, it's going to have to be somewhere else, because white supremacy will never tolerate black power. And that's something that a lot of brothers and sisters in the revolutionary community, in the conscious community, don't want to deal with. It's a reality that we like to deny. And that is the reality that every time we as a people have built an independent community in this country, it was torn down by racists. Rosewood, Tulsa, Charleston.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to be in a documentary. There's a documentary that's going to be coming out sometime the end of this year called Wilmington on Fire. Please look for the documentary Wilmington on Fire. It's about the race riot in Wilmington, North Carolina, that occurred at the end of the 19th century. I'm going to be in that documentary. I mean, and there's been dozens of them. Of course,
Wilmington and Tulsa, you know, and Rosewood. Those are the more popular ones, but it's happened all over this country. Whenever black people get their act together and build, it gets destroyed, and it gets destroyed with the support of the United States government. So, you know, I'm a realist, and although I think we can do some things here, if we want to build for good and not have to keep repairing it every time they tear it down, we're going to have to take it to a black country. Now, whether that be in the Caribbean, whether that be in Africa, whether it's in Asia, doesn't matter where, but it's not going to be able to be in Europe or the United States. They are not going to tolerate a black progress that threatens their monopoly on economic empireship. They're just not going to do it. So, I mean, I agree with what you're doing. Stay in touch with me, because we can probably go over there and do some work together on the continent.
Well, brother, I met you in Atlanta. I was with my daughter. My daughter, when she asked you, ain't no mystery, she told you. And I was that brother. And I told you what I did. I told you I'm a telecommunication, you know. But I already see that they already trying to get me out of that industry. And I figured, I don't really care. I mean, they're going to pay me for the rest of my life, you know what I'm saying? So only way I don't get paid for the rest of my life, if I go build a network for myself, that's the agreement that we signed. And I don't have no problem with that, you know? I mean, I don't really have nothing here but my kids, you know, and I look at it that my son, he's on board with me. He's going with Dad. He said, Dad, whatever you go, I'm going with you. So I'm just trying to get his mind right. He keep thinking, oh, we go to Africa, I can't go to this, I can't go to that. And I'm keep trying to tell him, bro, don't even worry about that. You know, as long as we can get on the internet, we good. I tell him like that. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the drinking water. Don't worry about nothing. But I think we're going to make that decision when I go to New York on the 16th for the House of Conscious 13-year anniversary. I'm going to sit and tell brothers, if you want me here, I'll stay. But I don't think we're going to make it here. I think I need to go across the water and do what I need to do, because companies come at me all the time, and a lot of times I turn them down. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that, because I don't want to sell my soul for what I know, you know. And yeah, a lot of times people say, well, you don't chase the money. Well, a lot of people say, well, it's all about the money, and I truly don't believe in that. My mother and father told me, do not chase money, chase what you love. And
Thank you so much.
And believe me, you don't know how many people don't came to me just to sell out my own people. Oh, well, you know, Corey, we can do this, and we can give you all that. And I'll be like, nah, I'm not doing that.
It definitely looks like you definitely have this under control, and thank you so much for calling in
and
sharing your story and speaking with Dr. Umar Johnson tonight. So peace and blessings to you, brother. Peace and blessings.
Same here.
Thank you. All right. We're going to continue. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 843. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, Ms. Blue. This is Nancy Lockhart. How are you?
I am wonderful. Greetings to you, Nancy. Love.
Greetings. How are you, Dr. Umar? Good. I had a question. I'm just wondering, in terms of IEPs for, you know, special education students, I'm wondering if you're seeing the same standardized IEPs across the nation. I'm formerly a public school teacher, and our IEPs were always just simply computer generated. Nothing was individualized, which is one of the instruments that I always said, you know, led to this school to prison pipeline.
Agree with you, couldn't agree more. You're absolutely correct. The IEP, which is a legal binding document between the local school district and the parent, is probably the most broken contract in America. The IEP is a contract, and it is the most broken, the most violated. Rarely are they followed. Rarely are they referred to. I'm telling y'all the God's honest truth. Black kids, white kids, rich schools, poor schools, The IEP is the most violated contract in America. You are absolutely right. It leads to the school-to-prison pipeline by virtue of a poor education. The primary responsibility of the IEP team is to monitor the progress of the special ed child. Monitor the progress of the special ed child. If the IEP doesn't monitor the progress, they never learn anything. This is how you get black kids in special ed. They've been in special ed since the fourth grade. Now they're in 12th grade, and they still only read on the fifth grade level. How did that happen?
Right.
That can only happen because nobody is monitoring the kid's progress. Nobody, not even the parent, is making sure special ed is benefiting the child. The IEP team is supposed to make sure special education is benefiting the child. They're not. These kids turn 18, still can't read, still can't write. But guess what? They got a regular high school diploma because they were special ed. They couldn't be, their disability couldn't be used against them. Isn't that funny? Their disability couldn't be used against them, so they graduate on time. And unfortunately, it catches up with them when they go to college because they're not ready. They go to community college, they're not ready. They go to trade school, they're not ready. They go looking for a job, they're not ready. The next thing you know, they're out here selling drugs. Why? Because they got pushed through school because they were labeled with a disability that they didn't even have. Nobody monitored their progress. And the next thing you know, they're walking across the stage with a cap and gown like all the other 12th graders, except they don't know nothing. And it catches with them later. That's why I tell black parents, stop using special ed to cheat because you're not getting over
it.
You're only cheating your child out of an education. Well, my son in special ed, he don't never get left down. My daughter, she in special ed, she repeated twice, but as soon as they put her in special ed, they put her back up to her right grade. You're not getting over. You're not getting over. It's going to catch up to your child sooner or later. Sometimes the best advice that I have for a parent is to keep your child back a grade. Sometimes that's my recommendation. This child don't have a disability. They don't need special ed. What they need is another year of the same grade. And the parents look at me like I'm crazy. The principal look at me like I'm crazy. Why are you recommending another year in this grade? Why? Because the instruction they got was piss poor. That's why. They got a poor instruction this year or a poor instruction last year. Somewhere in these past couple of years, this child was deprived of an effective education. We are not going to put them in special education because they don't have a disability. And we are not going to move them on because social promotion is illegal. We're going to keep them in the same grade, and they're going to be here another year. Okay, so they graduate from high school at 18 instead of 17. Okay, so what? But at least they'll be functional. At least they'll be functional. What you want to do? Keep pushing them through school, and they graduate with a regular diploma and don't know a damn thing. And now most states, have mandatory graduation exams. You don't even get a diploma unless you can pass a test. So guess what? The days of pushing your kids through school is over because they're going to catch them at the end with a graduation test, and they know our kids ain't going to pass it.
So can I ask this question, please? What do you suggest that parents do to change this, you know, standard computerized IEP? Because I know that somewhere in one of those laws, I think maybe PL 94142, I'm not sure, it states that if a district cannot assist a child or meet the needs of a child, then the child has to be taken, you know, transportation paid for and everything, to another district that may have the curriculum, the facilities, or whatever. I see it more and more in children with actual physical disabilities. And because those things are not written into the IEP, because the parents do not know what to expect in an IEP meeting when they go there, they don't know what to ask for, what do you feel can be done, you know, to change this? Because I'm hearing about, I experienced it myself as a teacher, but I'm hearing more and more, you know, about this same standardized IEP. And I'm in South Carolina.
Okay. Well, first of all, IDEIA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Improvement Act, that is the federal special ed law, which was reauthorized and signed by former President George Bush in 2004. So we've been under the current special ed law since 2004, President Obama Well, whoever becomes president, doesn't matter who it is, they're probably going to change special ed again. But anyway, the law requires that there must be an individual education plan for the districts. It does not mandate any particular form. So that computerized form that your state is using, they can use it. But you as parent, okay, have the right to add anything to it you think is necessary. That's just a template. That's just a template. The law does not restrict how detailed the IEP is. So what your district is using is simply a form that they created, a form that they created to get the IEP done. It's only a form. If the special ed parents wanted to get together and adopt another form, y'all could do that. So that is not a law. The type of form is not a law. That's simply a practice. That's simply a practice or a policy that the district has, but it can be changed. I tell parents all the time, never sign an IEP unless you agree with everything on it, and never sign it the day of the meeting. Never sign it the day of the meeting. Take it home, look it over, think over it, sleep on it a little bit, and tell the school you'll get back with them. Parents have to stop letting the schools pressure them into signing on the spot. Schools are notorious for this. They're notorious.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the things I hate the most is they do the IEP before you even get to the meeting. They did the IEP based on another kid's IEP, and then they ask you to sign, and some of us are so ridiculous and so trifling that we sign our name on a document that we didn't even read, letting the school know we don't give a damn about our kids.
So do you, if parents were to contact you, do you assist parents in customizing an IEP? Okay, thanks.
No,
all right. Thank you for that, Nancy, our country's leading legal analyst. Thank you so much for calling in. Peace and love to you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to continue here. We're probably going to take one more call, calling in from area code 646. If you're live in the remix, please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Who's on the line, please?
This is Amanda calling from the Bronx.
Okay, greetings.
Greetings. How are you tonight?
Wonderful. You have a question for Dr. Omar?
Yes, I do have a question, but more of a statement, I guess. I'll ask Dr. Omar what he thinks about it. But basically about the setup of classrooms. Like, I know that how the classrooms are set up. We come into a classroom, there's like individual seats, and the teacher is at the front of the room dictating to the students basically what the lesson plan is, what our homework is, so forth and so on. But how do you feel about the origin of a classroom being, the base of a classroom being students learning in an environment where the seats are in a circle, so we're basically in a position of like the orator teaching us from like the focal point, the focus point being the middle of this being the middle of the circle, so forth and so on, and also like
learning
what type of position is on.
Well, I have a big problem with the structure of class. First of all, let's understand why we have a lecture model of public education.
Okay.
Because the first schools in America were started by the church. So school became just like church, where everybody sits and listens to the pastor. It's the same model. If you look at the school, it's just like church. You go from class to class. You have a minister up front. That's the teacher. And then you have the congregation. That's the classroom. Now, any neuroscientist, any neurological psychologist, any educational psychologist, school psychologist will tell you that children do not learn best when sitting still. Children do not learn best when sitting still. Now, are there times when you need to sit still and learn? Of course. If I'm trying to teach you something new, you need to sit there and get it. But guess what? Practice makes perfect. And if we want children to really digest, master a particular skill, they need to work on the skill. Work on it. You demonstrate it, and then you let them practice. That's how the children actually master the skill. But we want them to sit there. You know why? Because it's easy for the teacher. It's easy for the teacher. It's easy for the teacher. Social learning research has shown that when children work together, when they work in groups, even when they work independently, but they're able to get up and move around, it facilitates the learning. It facilitates the learning because there's something to be said about
the brain and the body, which work together, if the body is still, the brain is still. If the body is active, the brain is active. So to an extent, if you want the brain to be in motion, the mind, the body being in motion can help facilitate the motion of the mind as well. So we want our children up. We want them moving. We want them working around. But the problem is that makes the teacher work harder. Now they have to travel the room. Now they got to check on everybody. They just can't stand up front and give a lesson. It's about laziness, and it's about a 400-year-old outdated church-based education model which don't benefit nobody. And that's why American public school children are nearly at the bottom of the list when compared to the other 26 most industrialized nations on this planet. I believe America comes in at number 22. This system of public education we got over here, not only is it no good for the black children, it ain't no good for the white children either. But let me clarify, it doesn't have to be good for the white children. You want to know why? Because they're white. So whether they have mastered academics or not is irrelevant. They're going to get the job anyway. That's right. That's right. They benefit from white privilege. That's why black parents call me and they say, Brother Umar, our kids go to this white private school, but the school is ungraded. It's ungraded. They don't give out grades. I'm concerned about that. Why these white people don't mind their children not getting grades? I said, because those children are born with a spoon in their mouth.
Yes.
They don't have to learn nothing. They're going to be CEO anyway. They're going to be president of the United States anyway. They're going to be the governor anyway. They're going to be on Wall Street anyway. Not because they got the brains, but they got the bloodline connect to other rich white people. But I said, for your black child, you need to think twice about what you're doing, because your black child don't have no spoon in his mouth. You got him going to this white school and they not giving him no grades, and you spending $15,000 a year and you don't even know if your child learning. And then the next thing you know, he end up getting put out of school. You put him in a regular school, and you find out that he wasn't learning nothing at that $15,000 a year public private school. And now you mad. Now you mad. Why would you put a kid who's going to have to work like hell for everything they need in life right next to a kid who ain't got to work for nothing? Why would you do that? It makes absolutely no sense. You are setting your kid up for failure because he thinks he's going to be treated just like them white kids, and that is not the case, which is why I implore you all to stop putting our black boys in white private schools, because the only thing they get taught is just how racist some white people can be.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings. Yes, yes. Dr. Umar Johnson, what I want to do at this time, I want to go ahead and close us out. I'm not sure how much more time we'll have. But first, I want to say thank you for all your work that you're doing, that you will continue to do. And know that you can always come back to the platform. It's always open, an open invitation for you. We learn so much when you're here. We grow so much when you're here. And it's so much for us to continue to do. As we all continue on our path and really bringing some of these things to the forefront again. So for that, I am eternally grateful.
Thank you, sister. I really enjoyed myself. The time went fast, even though it was 3.5. It seemed like it was 1.5.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Looking forward to coming back. We may have to do something regular, like maybe once every two months or something like that.
That would be great.
You know,
great.
So the people can anticipate when I'll be on, so we'll have a little bit of a schedule. So just send me a little message on that. We can just pick a couple of dates, and you can let folks know this is when he'll be there so they can look forward to that. But always an honor. Every time we do a show together, Ms. Blue, I mean, it's always a classic. I'm sure this one will be replayed thousands of times.
Yeah.
I still run into people who are still playing the first show, the very first one we did. And I guess it's been almost 2 years now, and people love that show. I mean, one brother, he liked it so much, he downloaded, already had it on CD from when you sent me the link, but he didn't know that, so the brother was kind enough to download the show, and he actually brought it to one of my conferences, and he said, hey, this is your show for Mrs. Blue. I listened to it so much, I downloaded it and brought you a copy.
You know, beautiful.
So I need to look and see how many hits we got on them, because I'm sure we got a whole bunch.
Yes, yes.
People
I
love
know the first show definitely was over 20,000. So I haven't checked on it since then, but it was over 20,000. So, yes, definitely the word gets out. And yes, you know, people really are taking to the message. And, you know, this is really, really great. So for new listeners, those who have just come on board, and for those who have been sort of listening the whole time, it's a great way to connect with you and to know your work and be able to get some of the DVDs that you have now. I'm so excited about your books. Coming out and everything that you have. I'm going to go over there and do a little shopping as well, too, and pick up a few things. So it's just an honor. I love to have you on, and I'd love to do something so we can plan it out and everybody will know when you're here. So, yeah. Give us some closing words as we close out for the evening.
Closing words, I would like to use a quote from my ancestor, Frederick Douglass, who said, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess the faith of freedom and yet depreciate agitation are like men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain, but they can't stand the thunder or the lightning. They want the water from the ocean, but they can't deal with the roar of its waves." He says the struggle we have might be moral, or it might be physical, or it might be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. He said, "Find out what any people quietly submits to, and you have found the exact measure of injustice that will be used against them, because the limits of the tyrant are prescribed by the people who they oppress." He said, "For 20 years I prayed on my knees to God for freedom, but God didn't give me freedom until I got up off my knees and prayed with my feet. If we are to be free, then we ourselves must strike the first blow. No one can do this for us." He said, "We have to remember that power can seize nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. If you want to be pitied, you can receive pity, but don't ask for respect, because this world can only give one or the other, never both at the same time." He said, it's criminal to help a man when he won't help himself, that people who won't fight for themselves aren't worth being fought for by others, that if we intend to be the equal of the white man, then we must act like it. We must make it real. He cannot make us his equal, for it is the person on the bottom who must assert their right to their own manhood and their own womanhood. God has given us all the tools we need to fix our problem. We simply have to put them to work.
Solid truth, everyone. Dr. Umar Johnson, yes. Peace and love to you. Peace and love to you.
Oh, indeed, Mrs. Blue. Have a good evening, lady, and let's set up those dates.
Yes, we certainly will. That's going to do it for us here tonight, you guys. A powerful share here live in the remix. Definitely you want to go back and download. Dr. Umar Johnson, everyone. Peace and love to you guys out there. Look forward to seeing you back here in the forum on Friday night. You know how we do. Remix time, everyone. Kim Business Class is in full effect. See you guys in the readings and catch up with you on Facebook. So peace and love, everyone, and much love, warm spirit. Peace.